street.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City Council meeting, City of Arroyo Grande, for Tuesday, February the 8th. Roll call, please.
Council Board Member Dickens.
Here.
Council Board Member Guthrie.
Here.
Council Board Member Arnold.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chair Costello.
Here.
And Mayor Chair Farrar.
Here. Thank you. It was really nice of all of you to come out and see us tonight. We really appreciate that. Item three is our flag salute. The Arroyo Grande Lions Club is here to lead us in the flag salute. If you would remain standing for our invocation, Pastor George Lepper from Peace Lutheran Church here in Arroyo Grande will do our invocation tonight.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let us pray. Father in heaven, we do thank and praise you for this glorious day. We ask, Lord, you bring wisdom to our city council as they go through the city business tonight. Be with our city workers as well, especially the fire and the police department. Guide and protect them as they serve our community. And be with all the city workers. Be with those also serving in the armed forces throughout this country and throughout the world. Guide and protect them and watch over them. And be with us, Lord, as citizens of this city, that we may work together to build a better place to live for all people. We pray this in the name of our personal Lord and Savior. Amen.
Well, I'm sort of hesitant to begin tonight's meeting on a sad note, but I was just informed that a very prominent member of the community, someone I've known for quite a while, passed away today, Mr. Mike Titus. We're very sorry to hear that news, and if you would join me in a moment of silence in his memory. Thank you. This evening, We have several special presentations, and they are indeed special because tonight we're going to recognize our outgoing commissioners and committee and board members. I'm going to step down from the dais to make those recognitions, and I haven't asked him yet, but I was wondering if the Mayor Pro Tem would help me.
I'd be delighted.
Good. This is a logistical challenge. Okay, but we're going to get through it. So this is an opportunity for us to focus on those individuals who've given up a tremendous amount of their time and away from their family to serve their city. And so this is a small token of our appreciation. And I'm going to call, first of all, the planning commissioners up here, the outgoing planning commissioners. And unfortunately, Nan Fowler could not be here this evening, but We have her recognition. We're going to keep it, and perhaps we can bring her back when she's able to make it and we have it. I'm not sure this is fair. We're going to recognize Jim Guthrie and Ed Arnold. Gentlemen, if you could come up. See, but now they're getting paid to serve the Okay, so gentlemen, it's my pleasure to recognize the work and the long hours and days and, again, time away from your families. The Planning Commission, for those of you who are not aware of it, is a very arduous position, a lot of material to get through week after week after week, and these gentlemen did a tremendous job, and we're very much appreciative. And obviously, the experience that you gained from the Planning Commission is now benefiting you here. So we'd like to present these to you. Congratulations. And then also, we'd like to bring up outgoing members of the Traffic Commission, Scott Metcalf. Scott here tonight? Not here? Okay. Daryl Pilkington? Where's your car show jacket, by the way? Your car show jacket. And Kirk Scott. The Traffic Commission is a commission that's near and dear to my heart. I think I spent 3 years on the Traffic Commission. Again, very important work, and gentlemen, we were very pleased and privileged to have you on the Traffic Commission. We're going to miss you. And we'd like to recognize the effort that you put into the job as planning commissioner. So, Joe? Our traffic commissioner. Sorry about that. Next is the Senior Advisory Commission. Herman Olave? Not here tonight? Okay. And then Parks and Recreation Commission, Harlan Silva and Bob Brown. Gentlemen, once again, thanks for all the time and effort that you put into it. We really appreciate it. Last but certainly not least, Architectural Review Committee, Melanie Hodges and Jamie Oler. This evening? She's not here either. Okay. We'll catch up to her. At this time, what I would like to do before we recognize all of our commissioners and board members, I'd like to ask Sandy Lubin, who's here, former council member, and Tom Runnels, also former council member. They've asked to say a few words of appreciation. So, gentlemen, come on up. Remember these guys?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members, ex-planning commission members. I wanted to take this opportunity to thank all the commissioners. We go through a long process of trying to find people, first, who will volunteer, and secondly, find those who have the expertise in the various areas that we're interested in, whether it's traffic or parks and rec or architectural committee. For me, I had five people during the 4 years, and every one of them served with distinction and honor and left me with very few headaches, and I really appreciated that. And I just wanted to say a couple of words just to say thank you very much. Harlan's the only one of mine here tonight, but thank you, Harlan. And to all the others who may see this, I thank them personally as well. Thank you.
I likewise was fortunate enough to have good people that represented me. I had to twist a few arms a couple of times to get them to agree, but that they were gracious enough to do that. And they did a lot of the work and the hard work and the legwork for us and made my job easier. So I'd like to thank Daryl Pilkington and where do you go? Jamie Older in the back, and Herman O'Leave is not here. And John Keene is out in the other room, and he didn't. He got reappointed. So for all of you, thank you very much, and it has been a pleasure to be on the council. Thank you.
We're not done yet. And, I think they're worthy of one last big round of applause for all of our board members. And we will obviously catch up with those folks who could not be here. I also wanted to drop everything that's in my hands. I also wanted to recognize Kirk Scott as well, because not only did Kirk serve on the Traffic Commission, but he also served on CTAC, our Citizens Traffic Advisory Committee for the county. And so, Kirk, we're very appreciative. And while we're on the subject of Kirk, we have another recognition. And Kirk, if you would like to come up here. Kirk, this evening it's my pleasure to recognize you for something that I know the community is appreciative. And before we make this presentation, I want to take just a few moments and let everyone know why Kirk is up here. And I think the pictures that you'll see on the screen will be self-explanatory. So can we roll? Okay. Kirk is here this evening, obviously, for us to recognize him for his hard work and his effort in sort of leading the project that put that beautiful barn in Heritage Square. So, Kirk, we are so very grateful for all of your time and energy. This was your baby from beginning to end. And I know most of you, some of you, if you watch the council meetings, you heard us refer to an event that we actually hosted, the city hosted along with the city of Grover Beach. We invited over 100 elected officials to join us. It was our quarterly meeting of the Channel Counties for the League of Cities. And so these were city representatives from San Luis Obispo County, Santa Barbara County, Ventura County. And they joined us here. It was our turn again to host the business meeting, and we began with a reception out in Heritage Square, and this was last May, I believe. They still talk about it, and all of them mention, almost all of them will still mention the barn and ask us, how did you make such an old building look so good? And so we are so very grateful, Kirk, to you for this tremendous contribution to our community. It was not an easy task, and so this is a small token. This is a mayor's commendation recognizing Kirk Scott on this 8th day of February 2005 for efforts in coordinating, overseeing, and constructing the South County Historical Society's barn project at Heritage Square. My pleasure to present this.
You know, it's dangerous when you get to put a mic in front of a retired actor. We began the barn over 4 years ago with a trip to San Juan Bautista, where I saw a livery stable museum that sort of sparked the idea. And from that time on, I admit, I was pretty relentless about getting it built. I badgered everyone, including our brand new city manager at that time, Steve Adams, if you'll remember. And then Councilman Jim Dickens, and then Planning Commissioner Jim Guthrie, and as well as Architectural Review member Chuck Fellows. They all had some improvements on my idea. It had cost more than I wanted to spend, but their input forced me to stay on track for a building that would be best suited to Heritage Square, and their help was invaluable. I'm going to thank Rob Strong and Ryan Foster from Community Development, who helped me through the approval process. Larry Schmidt, our building inspector, was really virtually a fountain of ideas to get in. You know, you can't live 4x10 sheets of plywood when you're my age. And then there's John Bryant, Edward Diable. They sealed the walls on the interior. And Joe Swigert. Joe was always there when I needed him. Those are just a few of the names from a long list that helped on the barn. When you visit the barn, if you look on inside the front door, you'll see the complete list, and the thank yous are due to all those people. And finally, a special thank you to Pat Loomis for her steady generosity, giving us the freedom to build our dreams. I'm proud of what we accomplished. I'm grateful that I got to lead the parade, and I'm very appreciative to the city, both the council and the staff, for recognizing our work. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
No, thank you, Kirk. We're not done yet. At this time, it's my pleasure to present an honorary proclamation recognizing February 22nd, 2005, as Spay Day USA. And I'm not, do we have a representative here to accept this evening? I'm sorry. Cheryl, it's my pleasure to present this proclamation this evening. I want to read it. Whereas dogs and cats provide companionship to and share homes of over 63 million individuals in the United States, and whereas two unaltered cats and their offspring can produce 420,000 more cats in 7 years, and two unaltered dogs and their offspring can produce 67,000 more dogs in 6 years. And whereas humane societies and shelters have to kill approximately 4 million dogs and cats each year, although many of them are healthy and adoptable, simply because there are not enough good homes. And whereas the problem of companion animal overpopulation costs the taxpayers of this county over $1 billion annually through animal control programs aimed at, I'm sorry, this country. The Board of Supervisors are rolling over about right now. This country, over $1 billion annually through animal control programs aimed at coping with the millions of unwanted dogs and cats. And whereas spaying and neutering dogs and cats have been shown to drastically reduce dog and cat overpopulation. And whereas veterinarians, humane societies, national and local animal protection organizations, and private citizens work together to ensure
the spaying and neutering of more than 100,000 companion animals through Spay Day USA in 2004. And they have joined together again to advocate the spaying and neutering of companion animals on Spay Day USA 2005. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Tony Ferrara, Mayor of the City of Aurora Grande, on behalf of the City Council, do hereby proclaim that February 22, 2005, is designated as Spay Day USA.
In USA. Well, it was founded by the Doris Day Animal Foundation to encourage people to spay and neuter their pets. And did you know that animals as young as 5 months can become pregnant and have 3 litters per year? So you can do the calculations on that. The County of San Luis Obispo celebrates Spay Day USA from February 14th through March 31st. In a moment, I'll provide a few phone numbers to call for information on low-cost spay and neuter and where you can obtain certificates worth $20 towards this cost. And I'm here tonight to encourage the spay and neuter of dog and cats because I find the following statistics very disturbing. Approximately 5 million adoptable cats and dogs are killed in shelters each year. Specifically, 56% of dogs and puppies and 71% of cats and kittens entering shelters are killed every year in the United States alone. The bottom line is that there are not enough homes to accommodate the number of pets being born. This is where the importance of spay and neuter comes into play. But the good news is for San Luis Obispo County, we're doing a great job here because the number of pets euthanized every year are decreasing. I don't have the kill rates for 2004 yet. Dr. Anderson is telling me they're going to be out tomorrow, so I'm going to use. In 2002, 1,724 animals were euthanized, and these are the adoptable, healthy ones, not the sick, hurt ones that were hit by the car or the wild feral cats. In 2003, the numbers decreased to 648. But that's still a large number of cute and lovable animals that were basically killed because there are not enough homes. So there are a few numbers for people who are interested in spaying and neutering. For a list of vets and organizations offering low-cost spay and neuter, call 805-595-6612 or 546-3700, and they can direct you to the low-cost spay and neuter and vets. And beginning February 22nd, the County of Animal Services will have $20 certificates available to help with the cost of spay and neuter. You can get 3 certificates per household, so if you have 3 pets to get spayed or neutered, that'll be $60 in savings to you. And for information about their certificates and where to pick them up, I think they'll be distributing them in Oceano. Call 805-781-4400. And in closing, if your pets are spayed and neutered, maybe you would consider sponsoring a neighbor's pet or sponsoring a pet already at a shelter. So thank you, and I appreciate the support.
Thank you, Cheryl. Well, I certainly would like to invite all of you to remain this evening for the entire council meeting, but something tells me that just isn't going to happen. So we'll give you just a few minutes. If you decide that you've got another priority, this would be a time to take care of that. Thank you. You move that all resolutions and ordinances presented tonight be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. That takes us to item 7. Community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to come forward and make comments that are or observations that are not on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act prohibits the council from taking any actions that are not published on the agenda. We would ask that you limit your comments to 3 minutes or less, and please address the council as a whole. Is there anyone who would like to come forward on public comment? Okay. Seeing none, We will close that. We will go to the consent agenda, item number 8. This is a group of items that the council generally approves with one action, unless there is a particular item on consent that a member of the council would like to pull for further discussion and or clarification. Are there items to pull?
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to pull 80 for comments only.
Okay. Are there any others? Okay, no others. If there are no others, then I would entertain a motion to approve consent items 8A through 8I with the exception of 8E.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Anything in there?
There is, Mayor Farrar. There are two. It happens that 8E is an ordinance as well. We'll consider that separately. 8G is an ordinance entitled An Ordinance of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande adding Chapter 13.06 to Title 13 of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code regarding implementation of a mandatory plumbing retrofit program and procedure upon the change of ownership of real property.
Thank you, Tim. Okay, with that reading, then, we have a motion and a second to approve items 8A through 8I with the exception of 8E. Roll call.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Council Board Member Guthrie?
Yes.
Council Board Member Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chair Costello?
Yes.
And Mayor Chair Farrar?
Yes. Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem, item 8E.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to express my complete support for this measure, the adoption of an ordinance and resolution regarding licensing of tobacco retailers. I wasn't present for the last meeting, and I wanted to make it very clear that I do support this fully. Selling tobacco is a privilege, and it carries responsibilities with it. And I think that it's only right, proper, and fitting that we have this type of measure in place to help to regulate that sales, to ensure that tobacco products are not sold to underage minors. I know I lost my mother to tobacco. She was a lifelong smoker and was never able to quit, and it ultimately killed her. So I came from a home where I saw from very early age myself the effects of smoking, and she obviously started when she was very young, teenager. So anything we can do to prevent this and help is, I think, an effort well worth taking and undertaking, and I support this completely. And with that said, I'd move that we adopt, unless anyone else has any other comments to make.
Any other comments on it? Yes. With the council's approval, there's been a request on our public hearings, item 9, to move 9B, the consideration of development code amendment, since that's likely to not take much time at all, move that ahead of 9A. Is there anyone who has an issue with that? Okay, then with that, we will go ahead and address 9B. Make sure you observe the speed limit, Chief.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and Council.
Good evening,
members.
Teresa.
Tonight's proposal is to consider a revision to the zoning map to rezone certain properties for consistency with the general plan. As you're well aware, the Council recently revised zoning for the mixed-use and commercial districts, and this is essentially a cleanup ordinance to catch some of the properties that we're not being zoned to any of those new districts we just put in place, and to clarify and make sure the map areas were consistent with the general plan. And the Planning Commission has reviewed this proposal in January and recommended approval. In your packets, you have this map, and this shows the property locations where we are changing some of the zoning for the properties, and a table that explains each and every change being proposed. Tonight's proposal includes only a change to the zoning map. Forthcoming proposals will include further cleanup amendments, and we will be proposing to modify our residential districts and public facility, quasi-public facilities, to finish up and complete our development code update. So tonight's recommendation is that the Planning Commission recommends that the City and Council and introduce for first reading an ordinance amending the zoning map to rezone certain properties for consistency with the general plan. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Are there questions for Teresa? Okay. Seeing none, this is a public hearing. If there are members of the public that would like to come forward and comment on 9B, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Okay, no one. Close the public hearing portion of 9B and bring this back. Councilmember Arnold, why don't you start us off here?
I have no problems with this, Mr. Mayor. Basically, as I see this, is all we're doing is some housekeeping to clean up to get our zoning in line with the general plan, so I can go forward with this. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Dickens?
I, too, Mr. Mayor, have no issue. I think this is just a cleanup issue, and I've looked at, reviewed all the parcels and their zoning, and it all looks...
And a good staff report.
And I don't have any problems either.
I'm sorry. I knew you didn't.
What was this? Miss 1 week.
Yeah, see what happens when you miss a week? Was that all, Mayor Pro Tem?
That's all, I think. Okay. Great work. Great work.
Okay, with that, I'll accept a motion on 9B.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we adopt an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Rio Grande amending the zoning map to rezone certain properties for consistency with the General Plan Development Code Amendment 04-006.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Just for the record, that's being introduced, and it'll come back for adoption. Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. Okay, that will take us back to 9A, consideration of amended conditional use permit, case number 04-001, to allow a financial institution to occupy Building J, 5 City Center.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. We're just doing our PowerPoint presentation, getting it up on the screen there. When the 5 Cities Shopping Center was originally approved in 1996, each of the 14 buildings was assigned a specific use, with Building J approved for commercial retail use only. Wells Fargo is proposing to amend the allowable use for Building J to occupy the remaining 4,550 square feet of vacant lease space. Because several amendments have already been made to the original CUP to allow different uses, this request does not set a precedent. Examples include allowing a restaurant in Building J, a financial institution in Building L, and then a fitness center in Building F. This particular lease area in Building J has been vacant since the building's construction in 2000, and then Hallmark recently vacated the adjacent lease space. Modifications to the storefront include changing out existing doors for full glass windows, enlarging the front door, and then installing stucco in place of glass for the new ATM machines. 2 31-square-foot signs are also proposed. Those would be on the north and east sides of the building, with no signage proposed on the back of the building. And then this slide just shows the door decals. The primary concern with this amendment includes parking, circulation, and traffic-related impacts. Parking calculations were conducted that show the proposed change in use will not adverse. That's for the shopping center with 8 peak hour trips in the morning and then 33 peak hour trips in the evening. The report concludes that the driveways on Rancho Parkway closest to West Branch Street entering phases 1 and 2 are currently operating at an unacceptable level of service D during the weekday p.m. peak hour, and recent counts show that the Five Cities Shopping Center generates more traffic on weekend days than on weekdays. As mitigation, the report suggests that a raised median on Rancho Parkway that allows left turns into both phases but precludes cross-traffic or left turns from either phase. People wanting to cross Rancho Parkway from one phase to the other would need to make a U-turn. Alternatively, the upper driveway on phase 2 could be used to make a left-hand turn. A condition of approval has been added requiring detailed engineering design and security deposit for those improvements prior to the bank occupying Building J. Occupancy of any new construction in Pad I would not be permitted until these traffic control improvements are implemented. So in conclusion, the Planning Commission recommends that Council approve the amended CUP by resolution allowing Wells Fargo Bank to occupy Building J. Staff further recommends that Council include a special condition requiring Rancho Parkway median traffic tunnelization design, cost estimate, and security deposit prior to bank occupancy, and construction of said improvements completed as soon as practical thereafter. This would, of course, be prior to any occupancy of Pad I. However, since receipt of the traffic impact study, both city staff and the applicant's representatives have begun to develop other potential alternative mitigation plans, and you will likely hear about these potential mitigations from staff and the applicant. However, it is likely that additional time would be needed in order to refine these mitigation plans to a point where they can be made specific conditions of approval, if so desired by the council. If the council desires to consider alternative mitigations, a 2-week continuance is recommended. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, but I'm going to hand it over to Don Spagnolo and Omni Means to discuss further some of the traffic-related impacts.
Thanks, Kelly. I'm going to ask Marty to do a little bit of a rundown on the actual study itself, and as soon as we can get...
The packet and the memo that was handed to us tonight.
Yes, largely, and there's some supporting text associated to that, and I was intending to go through that a little
bit. You will? Okay, great. All right. Thank you.
Mayor Ferrara and members of the City Council, my name is Marty Inouye from Omni Means. I'm a principal of the company and was the project manager for preparing the traffic analysis. Here with me tonight is Andrew Lee, who is also involved in the preparation of the study. I just wanted to briefly go through our study process in terms of updating some traffic counts. We're demonstrating where the locations are, and then the recommended mitigation. We looked at AM and PM midday and counts, not only on the weekday, but also on weekends. And What we in fact did was we ended up leaving hosed traffic counters out on several driveways and on Branch Street around Rancho Parkway to see what the traffic differences are between a weekday condition and a weekend condition in January. These were the locations. We looked at serving the Walmart side. We looked at the driveways on Rancho Parkway into the Walmart Center. We looked at the two driveways that went into the Trader Joe's side, and then on all three approaches of the West Branch Rancho Parkway intersection. And then, as Kelly mentioned, we'll be showing some alternative intersection and roadway improvements that Don will actually specifically go through. Actually, what I'd like to do is talk a little about the specific outcome of the weekday weekend counts, and shown in table 2 that's in your that's on the screen behind me, I highlighted some numbers. These were the driveway locations here, and the on a weekday PM peak hour, we're looking at these total volumes here. They're higher than in the AM and midday, not only on the weekday, which was expected, but what was interesting, in general, they're higher in the PM peak hour on the weekends as well. Similarly, on the roadway segments to all approaches to the Rancho Parkway West Branch intersection, again, the PMs were the higher locations. In general, what we found was that the weekend traffic on a daily basis was about 10% higher. But at the driveway locations, and this is just a sample. There's actually seven driveways that the other table that I wanted to share with you that was in this analysis was that there was some question that came up relative to the original shopping center EIR traffic analysis and the and what we found when we did count the driveways and looked at comparable trip rates consistent with the city's policy for trip generation analysis, which is to use a SANDAG trip generation handbook. When the original analysis was done, they used the Institute of Transportation Engineers trip generation handbook, which is certainly an industry standard. And that rate produced, even at full build out of about 355,000 square feet of the then called Grande Plaza Shopping Center, would generate about 15,600 daily trips and about 1,500 peak hour trips, PM peak hour trips. What we found was that the shopping center, and this is based on observed trip rates of adding up all the traffic at the driveways, that we ended up with a driveway rate for the existing shopping center that currently occupies about a little over 280,000 square feet of close to 19,500 daily trips and a little over 2,000 PM peak hour trips. So there's a significant increase. We also show the difference with the bank. But to amplify more of the bank difference given our current conditions, I'd like to go back to Table 3. And that was the primary difference between the memo that we had provided you before, which was dated January 31st, and this memo that's dated as of yesterday, February 7th. And it was based on some additional discussion and further information. Because the Wells Fargo Bank is in an inline existing location, we treated it as part of the shopping center, and we used the shopping center trip rate as we observed it. SANDAG actually has a different trip rate for banks that are in shopping centers, And so you can see in the second category, it says bank, Sandag, driveway, bank, Sandag, cumulative trip rates. And we use those trip rates to, in fact, generate the differences in trip generation. We then indicated to you what the difference is in peak hour trip generation. And what was in the original report, the draft report that we have now, is essentially 315 daily trips, 8 a.m. peak hour trips, and 33 p.m. peak hour trips. The in the future, the we looked at the Sandag trip rates and found that using driveway counts, we can get up to 683, and the numbers for on down the line. With that is that the Wells Fargo site is not a undeveloped piece of property. That is an existing use. Existing building that has 4,500 square feet. So if we were to look at the analysis, if a standard retail would have gone in, we would have used the regular shopping center rate, which was the 315, the 8 a.m., and the 33 p.m. peak hour rate. So what happens is that with the Wells Fargo, if you put the Wells Fargo use in, the bottom line of the roughly 200 additional daily trips, the 12 a.m. peak hour trips, and the 8 p.m. peak hour trips is a net increase versus putting the Wells Fargo use in instead of some other retail use into that existing space. So, you know, the significant findings is that there's a difference average weekday versus weekend there of about 10%. There is a significant difference between what was originally studied as a part of the original proposal to what we now occur. We feel we can mitigate, we show some mitigation for that, and that if the net difference in your evaluation of the Wells Fargo use of that existing space is the roughly 200 daily trips, 12 a.m. peak hour trips, and 8 a.m. peak hour trips. And that was the basis of the analysis. We now then looked at the issue of the one of the main driveways into that eastern portion of the shopping center, and we have a level of service problem at that driveway, and we've been looking at alternatives. We included an alternative in our original submittal. That has definitely has some pros and cons. There's issues that are going to be studied, and I'm going to turn over the discussion of the alternatives of how to handle that western driveway to Don, and he will go over those.
Yes, one of the things that Marty mentioned was the turning movements and the through traffic on the driveways, especially the movements as they relate to traffic coming from this part of the center to this part of the center. The level of service that was presented in the report indicates that there is a drop in level of service because of the movements, as I just mentioned, crossing movements and some of the turning movements. So in order to address those particular concerns, we came up with, and I've been working with Marty on some of these recommendations, that's why I'm presenting these to you, is that we try to eliminate some of the conflicting movements, and that's what this one does. This, for all intents and purposes, creates the remaining, all of the turning movements except the through movements here, and, of course, the left turn here, and allows the left turn to be made in this direction. All of these alternatives that we're going to be presenting this evening have pros and cons. The interesting thing about this, the positive aspects are that it does control the movements going this way from the shopping center. It does have some cons to it, as brought out, included or shown a right turn only pocket here. The length may vary. We haven't determined exactly what the length might be, but this is a depiction of the provision of a dedicated right turn lane which would allow time for people to make this movement, but still allow free-flowing right turns, which is the major movement. The cons to this particular approach would be that there's a slope in this area behind the building, and that would probably require some sort of retaining wall to protect the right turn pocket. This is another.
Excuse me, could you go back to that previous slide?
I'll try.
Wonders of technology.
There we go.
You mentioned that the whole idea here was to facilitate right turn traffic coming out of this driveway.
That's correct, yes.
Okay. In my mind, I guess I'm curious, how is this being posed as mitigation for the cross traffic? Sorry, Marty, didn't mean to zap you in the eye. The cross traffic is the issue, not the right turn traffic. And I understand that part of the congestion can very well be, and part of the irritation on the part of the people who are exiting would be having to wait back here to make a right turn. But that's not the issue. The issue is the traffic that's going to continue straight across. So how is this a mitigation for the problem at hand?
The what we see as the mitigation would be that the movements, it would be a reduction in the queue length that stacks up here when people are trying to make this crossing. As you mentioned, there is a queue, there is a stacking up. This will enable these a free flow of right turns while this person is waiting to make that that crossing, therefore increasing the level of service at that location or at that driveway. So level of service will go up if we're able to facilitate the right turning movement, reducing the queue and the delay time.
Just to add a little bit, about 60% of that southbound approach are right turns. And so what would we do is it doesn't actually eliminate the some of the delay to get across, but it separates out the right turn movements so the right turners don't have to sit in that queue and wait for their turn to get to the intersection. They can slide out, make that right turn, and then continue, which would theoretically open up some more gaps to more opportunity to cross. In terms of the specific problem, it addresses the problem a little bit less. Again, it's just an alternative that we started looking at and saying, well, how do we make some incremental improvement in that location?
This is an alternative where the one driveway or one entrance exit onto Rancho Parkway, but with the other entrance and exit on West Branch, we feel that there's sufficient egress and ingress to facilitate the traffic movement from this center to the other center. That would require them to go out onto West Branch, come up to Rancho Parkway and make a left and turn into the center using either driveway. This is another alternative. It's shown relatively, it's just relatively depicted here. This is where this driveway is the upper driveway to the Easterly Shopping Center or the Trader Joe's side. This is the upper driveway. And what we would like to do in this particular alternative is to close the lower driveway, the existing driveway, to the Walmart Center and move it up in this location, northerly, to match up with this driveway. I say it's depicted only because I think that this would probably need to be extended somewhere down in this area, and that'd be somewhat of a reconfiguration of some of these parking spaces.
Is that the driveway, or is that via the Caro?
That is the driveway to the north. That's the upper driveway.
Don, can you go back to that picture, please?
just via the care of your picture.
Is that a house on the
corner? Yeah, you're right. That is Via Vaquero.
That is Via Vaquero.
It was meant to be the driveway to the north. So the idea is to get it to line up with the upper driveway.
If it's the driveway from the north, it's going into dumps into the building then.
It would probably be down somewhere in here. But as I say, what the idea was to maybe it can be turned or somehow meander or... some other kind of configuration, but the idea was to line up those driveways. That was the main intent.
Don, when you came up with this alternative, did you spend some time on that north driveway, particularly around the issues of line of sight?
Some of the issues, the line of sight, particularly going to the south, was fine. We didn't go into too much detail as far as line of sight, grades, the alignment, the exact alignment of the driveway. This is just a conceptual idea that we thought might be, at least an alternative for consideration.
It's important to point out all these options will require further study. We're just trying to identify some options. If the council does not like the recommended option, that we can go back and with direction of council, maybe study some of these other options.
So yes, I think there'd be further details. I think that would need to be reviewed. This is an alternative that was identified in the report. This is a traffic signal. This is a depiction of the traffic signal. This is a traffic circle or a potential roundabout. We added this as kind of an option. This would require looking at the surrounding area as we increase this size to get the traffic around. The issues that related to this are the grade. There is a 6 to 7% downhill grade on a Rancho Parkway that would make it this turning movement would have to be negotiated slowly. And so those are some of the issues related to that. We also have it in close proximity to this intersection that is signalized, creating some issues with the signal and as far as timing goes and possible queuing. Those are the alternatives that we had prepared. Some of them are going to need additional detailing, but at least we wanted to present those. There is one more. Could you switch back to the – it's right on the front there. This is very similar to the first alternative where we put a barrier, a median barrier, that would direct or channelize the traffic. This one has the function of providing for, and I'll just circle it right here. This is the driveway to the west. This is the easterly driveway to the Trader Joe Shopping Center. This would be a hardscape median allowing left turns in and left turns out into an acceleration lane that would allow traffic to circle around and go into this driveway if they indeed wanted to make a right turn to make the crossover between the two shopping centers. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Does that conclude your report?
Yes.
Okay, questions on the staff report? Councilmember Arnold?
Mr. Mayor, I have an alternative that I drew up. Could I show it so that we could have discussion on it also?
Sure.
Basically, it's very similar to your last alternative in that when I looked at the proposed alternative that was suggested as the primary, I thought the U-turn down here was a really bad idea. I thought to throw more traffic down here looked like a real bad idea. And I also thought that if we're going to restrict all the traffic coming out of here, we're really forcing a lot of left turns. You're going to have to come out here to come back. So what I was looking at was, realistically, a left turn is not required here. If you're coming down Branch Street, you have three alternatives to come into the center. Likewise, if you're coming down this way, you have these entrances to come in again, so there's no reason to come. Turn lane could be added, and then you could have a left-hand turn lane with your barrier again, so there could be no cross traffic. Another alternative that I think would probably solve most of the problem as I see it today, but with the new pad, I also think that possibly down here, there is a spot where the grade is almost exactly the same as the road. If another road was cut in right here, this would be at minimal cost and grading. It could possibly sweep into the median a little bit, basically making this a dead end right here for the parking. And you'd lose some parking here, but I've yet to ever see, even during the Christmas holidays, anybody parking back here, allowing Camino Mercado, which is actually supposed to be a collector street, maybe getting a little bit of traffic on it where people could come in the back way here. That's just another alternative that I came up with.
Any other questions? Mayor Pro Tem?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. While we have this up, let me tack in something before I ask my questions. I think we do definitely need to look at some sort of configuration here. I think that trying to have people go down here and make a U-turn is very dangerous. We're going to have some way for people to get from this side to this side. The intent when they brought Wells Fargo forward was that this bank would service the entire facility. And if we do anything in here to create an impediment where people can't get from this side conveniently, that's going to be a real problem. So if we're going to have that service, we're going to have some sort of flow through here. I was thinking maybe we put a light over this intersection, make this a right turn only, right turn out, allow people to come straight across still, but put a traffic light up here, and this would be where people would exit this way and go this way or turn this way, and that would be the left turn. But now to my questions. When I looked at the traffic study that came forward, even before the changes, when we originally looked at this project, the city, because I did not see this on the Planning Commission when I was on the Planning Commission, so I didn't see the numbers before, at build-out, we had 15,601 trips. What we're looking at now with the proposal was 20,065 trips with just the Wells Fargo. That's nothing on Pad I or whatever. We'll talk about that a little bit later. That's 129% of maximum capacity already. And the daily trips is 143%. And the question this brought to my mind was, how did we get so wrong with our numbers? And maybe somebody can just give a quick explanation of how we got to this point from where we were, 10 years ago?
Mayor Pro Tem, excuse me. The original project was done, I can't remember, back in 1998 or so, whenever the project was approved. There was an environmental document. It was prepared by another traffic consultant. The parameters of that analysis were established at that time, which included using ITE trip generation rates. Beyond that, those rates are continuing to be used as an industry standard elsewhere. As a part of this process and Arroyo Grande's process, transportation engineers, and what that is traffic engineers at various cities do exactly what we did, is count all the driveways to a shopping center. And this is probably something that we need to submit to the institute that will start affecting their rate. But, we're dealing with national averages here. And what it also points to is that the Five Cities Shopping Center is a very successful shopping center. It attracts a lot of local and regional traffic, and a lot of people come to do business at your shopping center. So I don't know whether that's good news, or I would think that that's kind of good news, but the bad news is it brings a lot more traffic to your shopping center than what we would have normally expected.
But interestingly, SANDAG, which is stands for San Diego Council of Governments, there, what they've observed down in their area is consistent. It seems that in Southern California, there's a lot more people on the road driving and using their cars to get to these shopping centers, and so they are typically more busy. So that's when we decided to apply the SANDAG rate, which is consistent with the observed rate for the future projections as well.
I thought you said that the original projections were made on SANDAG.
No, the original projections were made on ITE, which is the Institute of Transportation Engineers.
So had we, back in 1998 when this project originally came forward, if we'd used the SANDAG numbers and used their studies, it probably would have yielded something that was much closer to what we're really seeing?
It's possible. Quite frankly, I do not know what the SANDAG rate would have been back in 1998. We're using the most current versions, and I couldn't tell you if they've changed substantially from what they are, from what they were back then to what they are now.
Okay, and I guess
the current version that we took off of the internet is close to our observed rate.
Okay, the current version is very close. Well, I guess now I'd ask staff if this were just dirt today, and this project came forward for approval now, and they came forward with the kind of study, with the kind of numbers that we're looking at now, what kind of mitigation would we be looking at?
I guess I'll answer this one. I think, that would be very similar. In this particular section on Rancho Parkway.
I'm not just talking about this. I'm talking about the whole project.
It's very difficult to answer. I think that would have been similar in that, in this regard. The similar parts would have been the signalization on West Branch, the widening of West Branch, Rancho Parkway widening, that being put through. Whether there would have been a signal at this particular driveway or if this driveway would have been allowed is unclear to me based on your question. But I think that there would have been some similar improvements that would have been conditioned.
Similar, but yet we would have been looking at 50% more traffic. We would have been anticipating a lot more traffic.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, because I look at this page 40 on the Omni Means draft report, and I'll quote here. Original traffic study performed for the then proposed Grande Plaza Shopping Center, ATE 1996, and the only fix for them is going to be when Briscoe Road gets reconstructed with 101. So the numbers would have been even worse had we used the SANDAG numbers then. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
No? I do.
Okay. Go ahead. Councilmember Guthrie.
Just quick. You counted four of the seven driveways in the shopping center. So there are three driveways that were not counted. I'm assuming the back driveway and the one down by the...
That's correct. We counted the main town center signalized driveway. We counted the Rancho Parkway driveway serving the Walmart side. And then we counted both driveways serving the Trader Joe's side. So it was the back driveway and the two secondary driveways that we felt... You know, it doesn't receive a large proportion of traffic. I think we have a reasonable sample, and it was just an effort to save a little money.
Well, and I understand, but does the study account for anything in those? Did you use some sort of a multiplier or something and say, well, if we had counted these, or is this number just doesn't count those driveways at all? When we get
it doesn't count those driveways at all. All we're saying is the increases. Oh, I'm sorry. In November, we did all of the driveways,
all seven locations. Okay.
And it was just recently when we did the
weekend counts
that we only took the sample.
That's what I
apologize.
Yeah, that's what I wasn't clear on.
That's why I have Andrew here, too.
Okay. And just so I'm clear on the way that you arrived at, that I think you arrived at the 33 trips, is you took the 70 per thousand that the center is developing now, and because there's some sort of shared use, I'm guessing you went from 70 to 42 to come up with a cumulative number?
No, actually, we used the observed rate to come up with a 33, because it's a what we considered an inline use, that there would be multi-purpose reasons for being the shopping center, including the bank. And so that's how we use – that's how we derive the 33. There's actually a rate that's provided in Sandag for a bank without a drive-through that was the rates that I provided in that revised document. And that's what resulted in the p.m. peak hour going up to 41 and the 8 additional p.m. peak hour trips. So this is – we pulled out of the Trip Generation Sandag handbook – the revised rate that provided the difference that yielded the eight
the second increase. Set of numbers that
right
that
exactly
okay
so that's a you know a book rate rather than an observed rate.
Well, yeah, but it's a book rate for banks,
right? A book rate for banks.
And also, I mean, the observed rate on the phase two side, on the Trader Joe's side, is actually 115 trips per thousand. When you take the 27,000 by the trips that are actually going into phase two, works out to 115. The based on square footage, phase one is significantly less. Mm-hmm. But there's actually 115 trips per thousand going into the phase one side based on dividing 3,000 by 27,000 square feet.
Which is very close to the rate that we actually used to derive the 41.
I think that by closing off the ability to move freely from one phase to the other is really a step backwards. And I am going to look forward to looking at some of the other alternatives that were presented this evening in better detail. I think that we're going to need to address this issue of coordinating the two different phases. We can't go back and redesign this project, but what we can do is try to do the best we can with the applicant's permission to mitigate these issues. This particular project is not built out, and we're only going to see increased traffic, especially as Pat I comes on board. So I'm looking forward to seeing those other alternatives, but I'm not in favor of having any kind of a solution that's going to really hinder traffic from flowing freely from one to the other. Don, my question would be that the alternatives that you presented this evening, at least in concept, is the applicant or the manager of this particular facility willing to see some of this stuff happen?
Well, in my discussions, and I'll let them speak for themselves, but in some of my discussions, I think that they were interested in looking at some of the alternatives. The last alternative was presented by them, and so I'll let them address that, but it was my understanding that they were interested.
And there was a comment made that if it were council's decision to look at other alternative mitigations, then a two-week continuance would be appropriate. Is that correct?
I would say 30 days would be very helpful to flush out all the issues.
All right. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem, did you have another?
Yeah, I had one more question. Back in the slide presentation you made, the PowerPoint presentation, one of the slides talked about West Branch Avenue with a driveway east of Rancho Parkway and one with west of Rancho Parkway. And I don't know where the driveway to the east would be.
Are you referring to the upper driveway?
No, I'm not sure what you're referring to, because the text on the slide or the text on the information talked about driveways on West Branch, east of Rancho Parkway and west of Rancho Parkway, and I'm trying to figure out what
I think those were the traffic counts on the street.
That's where we did the traffic counts.
Traffic counts on
the
street,
yes.
And not driveway. Okay, thank you.
I don't think I have any questions at this time. I just, you know, as a frame of reference, and it, you know, it serves no useful purpose to go back. But as I recall, being somewhat involved in this for several years before I came on the council, there were at least, I think, four separate traffic studies that were done by various traffic engineers, one which used the ITE, One which used Sandag. I think there was also a set of numbers that used Sandag, but without a grocery element. And all of those numbers were floating around at one time. And ultimately, and the determination at the time was that there would be overriding considerations and a recognition that the traffic was going to be severe. And now we're dealing with that problem. So this is not, I think for the majority of people who were around back then, this is not something that's new. It's not something that was unexpected. Just as a frame of reference, there were many studies that were conducted, and as I recall, none of them said the same thing. So, so much for, you know, with, and I certainly don't mean to, to speak negatively about the, the industry, I guess, but clearly, each one of those studies was put forth with an intent behind it. That's as direct as I can make it. That's exactly what I saw, as did many others. And this is what we have to deal with today. So that I'm not sure if that provides a frame of reference, but that's the way it was back then. This is a public hearing. If there are no other observations to make on the staff report at this time, we will ask the applicant to come forward first.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. My name is Carol Florence. I'm a principal planner with Oasis Associates, and I'm representing the applicant this evening. With me this evening, our representatives from Investec, our project architect is here as well as our project consulting engineer that can assist with any of the other traffic-related issues. I think maybe two is better this evening than one, apparently. I first of all just want to thank you for your patience over the last 9 months while these critical issues were being analyzed. Although I was not part of the earlier discussions, I just wanted to bring to the public's attention that it has been 9 months since this project was before council, and we appreciate your patience over that period as well as this evening. We've had an opportunity to review the staff report, the memorandum prepared by OmniMeans, as well as the traffic impact study, and I will admit to you that I was ready and willing to respectfully request that you uphold the Planning Commission's recommendation for approval based upon the findings and conditions. But given the fact that you now have before you what I think probably could be characterized as more hopeful in response to Mayor Farrar's discussion about the history of this project, we actually have options before us to correct at least one of the impact areas within the shopping center. I would like to actually say a couple of things before I conclude. One is that we understand and appreciate that there's an existing deficiency. I think that's something that we can't ignore at this point. Regardless if there's been four or no doubt, I just want to remind Council, Pat, I will be coming before you as a pre-application hearing this evening to talk about some of, hopefully, the non-traffic related issues because we're looking for some direction from you about the Pat I projects. But more importantly, just to remind you that when we make formal application for Pat I, that it will be reviewed under the California Environmental Quality Act, and we will again revisit the traffic issues to make sure that the proposed mitigation works for Pad I. I want to thank you very much for your consideration this evening.
Thank you, Ms. Florence. Before you leave, any questions? Hear none? Thank you. Anyone else who would like to come forward on this item?
Thanks for letting me appear. I'm Nathan Alvarado. I'm the branch manager for A.G. Edwards and here
here in Rio Grande. And my personal office is Building L, which is, for the last 2 years, I've been doing a traffic study. I want you guys to look at, because that's what I look at every day. I'm just going to throw out a suggestion, and because I know that you guys do what you do, and my only suggestion is perhaps to make the ingress into the Trader Joe's Center between my office and where the restaurant used to be a one-way street in, and allow don't allow anyone to go out that direction, because they can come around the unit and make a left that way. So it's just something off the top of my head. You could probably take a look at that in the real short run. There's nothing else that would, I think, have to be done. The other thing I think you need to mitigate at some point is Trader Joe's is brings a lot of food and a lot of business, and they also bring a lot of trucks. And they're starting to bring trucks in later on in the morning, which doesn't really bother me too much. And it's just something that I think you guys should be aware of and bring to their attention, because it's something in the long run you guys will also have to look at. I think it's, for the most part, my day starts at 6 in the morning and ends about 4. The traffic does flow pretty good. I know a lot of people will complain about it, but it does a pretty good job. Even at this point, I'm not there on weekends. But just a mild suggestion, you just may want to consider that one way in, and I think it might alleviate a lot of little things that you're looking at. So good luck.
Mr. Alvarado, before you get too far away, what time do the trucks show up in the morning? I'm curious.
They have trucks there as early as 5 in the morning, and then normally they're out of there by around 7. From time to time, I'll see a truck after 7, perhaps is 8:30. And so it's just something at some point that I think is going to have to be seriously looked at to make sure that they're not. I don't know what the agreement is or how much. It's a semi-truck that backs in there, and it's not easy. They've been pretty good about it, but it's just something that I think that you guys should just look into as time passes, especially if you're going to build out the other pads. I don't know what's going to go in there, and I don't know what sort of hours of operation you'll have, but that's something else that you'll have to think about.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. As I stated earlier, I think it's important that we apply appropriate mitigations to this particular application for the bank, and of course I'm looking at the cumulative effects on phase two and as it interacts with phase one, and what we have before us this evening, in my opinion, is not appropriate, and so I'm unable to move forward with what we have. So if it appears that staff is requesting that we maybe take a greater look at some of these other alternatives, and I would certainly like to see those prior to. So it would be my recommendation to continue this item for whatever period of time that staff feels is appropriate, and bring back the other alternatives to fully address this particular issue before moving forward. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Councilmember Guthrie?
I think we really have four things going on here. We one have the consideration of the difference in use here between a retail use and the financial use. I think clearly the financial use does in fact generate some more trips than the retail use would. And we should also take some consideration of the difference in the sales tax as well. I don't think we also have a short-term and a long-term traffic generation issue. Certainly, we have the long-term traffic generation on all of the intersections in the area. I don't think that we need to hold this piece of this development responsible for all of the intersections. But we do have the short-term issue here. I also concur that the mitigation as suggested, I don't think would have been functional. I do have some concerns whether there is a mitigation that is functional that will make cross-traffic possible between phase one and phase two. I do think the suggestion of one way in and one way out actually seems like the most obvious one, which I'm surprised wasn't proposed before, perhaps even with some sort of channelization so that the cross-traffic lands in what was the out lane on the south end, on the south driveway. I think that has possibilities. I do think we have to look at that because I wouldn't feel comfortable approving
the change in use at this point without knowing that we have some sort of a solution. I think this has happened many times in the past when it turns out there is no solution, or at least the solution that was apparent didn't work out, and so therefore there's no mitigation at all. On these particular issues, I do actually feel comfortable with the change in use if we can, in fact, mitigate the existing traffic pattern, because I don't think the difference in traffic between the retail use and the financial use, which actually is, you know, in percentages significant, but in actual trips isn't all that significant. Those would be my comments. So I think continuation is appropriate at this point.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, as you go through your comments, any feedback to us on particular options that we identified that you don't want us to include in the analysis, that would be helpful. Otherwise, we'd be glad to go ahead and bring back information on all of them. But if you want to narrow those down, that'd be also helpful.
Okay. Councilmember Arnold?
Well, I, too, agree that we need to look at the traffic, if that's where you're coming from. So I don't think a light would be functional. Moving the ramp to where the northern Trader Joe's exit is really does almost send it right into a building on the other side. So if you really start to look at all the options, I don't think they're real functional. Possibly maybe putting a stop sign even in farther up, possibly at the other exit, or even at Via Vaquero, just to slow traffic down might be something to consider. I'm not sure what the answer is, but I'm pretty sure that the things that were proposed tonight were not the answer. So with that said, I really don't even feel comfortable looking at evaluating a project for the building. And I definitely, even though we haven't talked about it yet, I think talking about the other pad is very premature. I think we need to have the traffic issue solved first, then worry about putting more traffic into the second phase, and then worry about adding more on top of that. So I guess those are my comments for now. I fully support staff's recommendation of a month continuance.
And we would like to do some further study on your option.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Well, there's good news and there's bad news, as was pointed out. There's a lot more traffic here because there's a lot more people coming and going to the center. That's good news. It's also bad news. The numbers are significantly higher than what we anticipated they would be. At this point, the proposed mitigation of making a divider in there and allowing left turn only and blocking off crossover, I can't support. I think that it's appropriate that we put this off. If staff needs 30 days, let's put it off 30 days. If staff needs 2 weeks, 2 weeks. And well, let staff recommend us what they need. One of the issues that was brought up in terms of bringing Wells Fargo in here was that Wells Fargo would be able to service the entire center. And I think that's a valid point to be raised. I think that makes a lot of sense. Any proposed mitigation that makes it extremely difficult to get from phase one to phase two should be rejected. I think that Councilman Dickens made a very good point when he said that we got to go back and remember what the goal of this should be, is to have smooth circulation between phases one and phase two. So I think we need a solution. I really am looking forward to some of the ones that you might come back with. Anything that closes the one that you had that closed off the driveway going down from Rancho Parkway into phase one, I don't think that's a good idea. That would force more traffic to enter along the driveway for the theater, and there's a lot of pedestrian traffic that goes through there. So if we start forcing a significant number of vehicles that would otherwise come up Rancho Parkway, turn left, and go down into phase one down that driveway, If even a third of them were to go down and make a right turn and enter the driveway between the theater and the parking area to the south side of it, would be bad. So I think that closing off the driveway is a bad option, and I don't think I could support that. The possibility of making that a one-way, I think, should be considered. That may not be possible. It may not be practical, but I think it's worth looking at. I think the options that
restrict traffic to right-way only coming out of the existing lower or southern driveway might be worth looking at. But I don't think we want to completely block off access from phase one to phase two with a no left turn there. If it's possible to keep that as a straight through, I think we might want to do that. Relocating the driveway and connecting it through on the inland side of the existing building J, I think it's building J that's down there, where Hollywood Video is, and the pizza place, the building. And yeah, let me borrow your laser there. Yeah, that perhaps adding the driveway in at this end of that building might be worthwhile. I don't know. Maybe you'd have to curve it and come in a little bit further up, a little bit further to the Albertson side of the building. Perhaps a driveway, as was mentioned by Councilman Arnold, to come in the back on the back side of the structures might be worthwhile. That's this one over here. Let me allow me to right there. That might be worthwhile too. As a feature that would be worth looking at. But I think we have to be mindful of circulation as a whole. We have to look at both the short-term issues as well as the long-term issues. I guess we'll talk about the long-term issues in a little while when we talk about Pad I. But we need a solution here. Maybe the solution is redirecting a driveway. Maybe it's adding a stop sign, one-way a traffic light. Maybe it's moving the Wells Fargo down into phase one somewhere. There might be locations down in phase one that are more appropriate. That's a possibility too. But I think we need a solution here. And I look forward to the ones that staff can come forward and show us, and maybe one of them will work. So I do support coming back in 2 weeks or 30 days, whatever staff needs to study this more.
Thank you. Don, is there a better site map that shows the whole development? Maybe one of the drawings that are up there by the projectors? Am I seeing them? Blow that up a little bit. Okay. Is that the same as that one? I guess it is. That'll work. That's okay. I guess bottom line, I would support the 30-day extension to see if we can come up with a study was first done. Some of the mitigation we discussed was whether or not a signal or a stop sign would be appropriate here. It was not because of the queuing that you mentioned, Don. Apparently, at the time, it was unacceptable because of its proximity to Branch. That's the way it was back then, at least. I don't know if that's changed. If we move farther ahead and farther up Rancho Parkway and talk about the potential for some form of a stop sign or signal here, I really do believe that was mentioned at some point during the original study. I could be wrong, but I seem to recall somebody discussing the line of sight issue of Rancho Parkway coming down this grade and around this corner. If you come out of that north driveway now, and this is my concern, both with the mitigation concept that was proposed in the plan and also related to several of the other mitigation measures where there seems to be a shift of traffic onto the north driveway. Line of sight is crucial. I go out of that driveway a lot, and when you commit yourself halfway across that street, you better be ready to step on the gas, because when the car comes around that corner, and we're not doing a very good job of
enforcing speed on Rancho Parkway, by the way. That's a separate issue. But when they come around that corner, they're on you. And you better hit the gas and make whatever maneuver you're going to make and get out of Dodge quick, because that car is on you. Now, I'm envisioning traffic on a weekend where we have Rancho Parkway feeding back all the way through Phase 1, Phase 2, Rancho Grande, and all the way back out to James Way, serving the tracks over there as well. So Rancho Parkway continues to be a very busy feeder street, or I think that's the term. Is it not, Don? Collector. And so when it comes around that corner, particularly on a weekend, that's not the safest place to be. So I would be mindful, if you're talking about shifting anything here, whether it's one-way traffic through here, whether it's putting emphasis at all on some sort of a directional flow here, whatever the case may be, that line of sight issue looms large, at least with me. As has already been stated, I'm not gonna support making a bad situation worse. And to me, closing this off and trying to maneuver vehicles in and around a raised median in any configuration here exacerbates the problem. The issue of Councilmember Dickens raised a moment ago, that the original intent of the shopping center, the design, was to have Phase 1 and Phase 2 interact, is true. That was what it was intended to do. I see nothing but a perilous journey ahead of us right now if we try and interrupt that interaction in any way. Channeling Traffic Bill's recommendation, I think the portion of his recommendation that I would like to look at, but I would offer this with caution, because it isn't just us up here, it's the rest of the community. But what I would be willing to do is look at another access back here. I would not, again, want to interrupt any flow here. So I'm not sure how much good that would do us. But in terms of offering another access, we would have to check off with, obviously, the surrounding community. The other thing that I'd like to be mindful of, and maybe this is a step back and looking at the larger issue, or as Councilmember Guthrie indicated, the short-term versus the long-term fix. Or was that you? I can't remember. That was you. If we step back from this and we look at Camino Mercado, I would be very cautious about looking at any kind of a circulation fix here that would impose additional traffic on Camino Mercado. And I realize that it's not before us tonight, and I realize that it's going to be a separate study. But if we have a hotel project that comes in there on the corner, we're going to have to somehow or another factor that in. And that's going to involve a study of Camino Mercado and its behavior with Branch. So the degree to which we look for a solution here, there may well be a positive correlation that could end up with negative results if we push traffic on to Camino Mercado. So this is not an easy fix, and I'm not saying that it's unsolvable, and I'm certainly willing to continue to look at it. But those are some very real cautions, and many of them are not new. They've been around for a while. One last comment, and I know we're going to get to it. I'll mention it now, and that is that we have to be very careful, once again, about the behavior of the flow between this driveway and this driveway in Phase 2, because if we begin now to intensify use here, looking at what is being proposed later on in Pad I, and certainly with the bank, there's a very real potential here, a very real potential, if we start restricting ingress and egress. And if we focus on this driveway once again, it's not only the external behavior or problems that could be created. But inside of the development, you could very well, on a busy afternoon, have queuing that goes back into the parking lots. So you almost have that now with Trader Joe's on a busy day, people trying to get out onto this U-shaped driveway. With the intensified use, particularly if you restrict any ingress and egress on either exit or entrance here, either driveway, you could have more backing up and more queuing into the retail parking area. So those are considerations as well. I'll say this again, I've said it before, the Mayor Pro Tem mentioned it. If we're going to have another week to or another month to sort of project, it was in the statement of overriding considerations. So, and it's also reinforced by our economic element and our general plan. So moving away from a business that will generate retail sales tax in favor of one that will not, but will only make our traffic circulation worse, there's something wrong with that picture to me, and I might as well get it out now because I don't see that sense going away at this time. So if we're able to minimize the impact of a financial institution on our traffic problem by relocating it and perhaps allowing it to serve more as a pedestrian-oriented business, then I would look more favorably on it. So those are my thoughts at this point, and I'm sure I'll probably think of a couple of others when I get outside in the parking lot. But for now, if we've got 30 more days to take a look at this, those are my hoped for focus for the next 30 days, along with everyone else's.
If I could just add one quick comment here.
Yeah.
I didn't think about alternatives here. I understand the mayor's concern about the mechanics of the way that the Phase 1 shopping center works around the theater, and I agree with that. But I hope that we would look at some sort of a solution that would make better use of the main entrance here to the five city, to Phase 1, which is a lighted intersection and is very, very, very underutilized. So anything that actually would improve the use of the main entry where the traffic lights are would improve the functionality of the whole shopping center. Certainly one strong possibility is that if the financial institution were located at the end of that entry, it's far more likely to get used for that purpose. But also, I'm not sure that there aren't ways of using some one-way activity or looking at the entire action inside the Phase 1 parking lot that could do both, take some of the traffic that currently enters from the Camino Mercado entry and actually move it to the main entry without forcing everybody to come down by the theater. So I'd hope we'd at least look at some functionality there that might make that possible.
And I would support that as well because Councilmember Guthrie is right. When traffic comes up branch to go to the theater, they don't go to the main entrance. They go in here, and they go out that way as well. And so the jam up is in here. And because Starbucks is there and some of the other restaurants are there. This is a congested area. They don't go here and then go around. Similarly, people who come to Walmart and come in that come from this direction on Branch will use that first driveway. And so you're right. The main entrance does get underutilized, and I'm not sure what we do about that, but certainly that's something that I would support looking at as well. I'm not sure what we could do to the internal circulation in terms of signage or direction control, but I'm sorry?
I just wanted to point out, Councilman Duffy is correct, only 25% is using this driveway. It's on this graphic.
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Okay. How's everyone doing? Need a break?
Let's take a quick break.
Before we get into item 11A, we're going to take a quick 10-minute break. So council will recess at this time for 10 minutes.
comes back.
Council is back in session. And let's see, that takes us to first item of new business, item 11A. And this is consideration of pre-application case number 04-017, revisions to Pad I, Five City Center.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of the City Council. This is a pre-application review, purpose of which is for the council to provide comment and feedback to the applicant regarding the proposal. Building Pad I is part of the Five City Center, which has been discussed at length tonight. Originally, Pad I was approved as a 36,000-square-foot single building. The proposal would split the pad into two buildings totaling 33,200 square feet, one of which would be a 15,000-square-foot anchor. Petco is currently being pursued as an anchor for that store. The other building would be 18,200 square feet and consist of a multi-tenant building. I think currently the plans are configured for up to seven individual tenants. Formal application would entail an amendment to the Five City Center conditional use permit. It would also entail an amendment to the Five City Center plan sign program, and it would be subject to environmental review and appropriate determination at the time that the formal application is required. We do have a bit of a head start with the traffic. We know that's coming up, and we would look at that in depth at the time of a formal application. Just looking at the site plan, the two dark areas are the proposed building pads for Pad I. I mentioned that it would entail an amendment to the Five City Center plan sign program. It does include a proposal for a Petco sign incorporated into a tower element, which would be located approximately here on the building, which would give Petco freeway exposure as a tenant, as an anchor tenant of Phase 2. It also would include two new monument signs, one at the northern driveway entrance and another at the corner of West Branch and Rancho Parkway. And with that, the recommendation is for City Council to review and comment on the proposed project. As it is a pre-application review, no formal action is required. And if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them at this time.
Questions on the staff report? Budget. You know, my pointer continues to make the rounds.
Get a green laser, though.
I believe the intent is that the trucks would circulate through this way, and as they make that left-hand turn, would back into a loading dock here behind Petco, and then continue up here for the multi-tenant building.
Is it the intent of the multi-tenant retail to actually have front access, what I would call to the rear here? It looks like it's actually designed in such a way that it could be accessed either way. Is that correct? So will this be considered the front or the back in the second unit, which you're identifying as the new multi-tenant retail? Correct.
Yes, right here?
Correct.
I believe that would be the rear of the property with some parking, probably for employees. I don't think that there's any intent to have public access from this side, but again, the applicant could probably clarify that if I'm mistaken.
And in regards to the plan sign, at one point I believe it was the intent to limit as much as possible the signage, focusing attention towards the, I guess that would be towards the south or to the freeway itself. Of course, we haven't stuck to that. We've already made precedents with Trader Joe's and some others. So it's the intent of the applicant to also promote an additional sign from for freeway access as well. Is that correct?
That is correct. It would be integrated into the tower element of the what I'll call the Petco building. And again, the intent of the plan sign program was to limit that, but there has been additional signage granted to Trader Joe's as an anchor. Petco would more than likely function as a secondary anchor to this phase of the project. And I believe there's also accommodation made for the corner restaurant to allow it to have multiple signs.
So currently we have the exceptions that we've made are what, Trader Joe's and any of the others?
The Vignetto restaurant, I believe, came in for an amendment that allowed an additional sign. And I'd have to double check, but I think also the AG Edwards was given an extra sign at the same time as Vignetto.
But we don't have any signage for Baja Fresh, Cold Stone, Hallmark, et cetera, along that particular building?
No, that's Baja Fresh does have one that could be viewed from the freeway, and that was allowed because it's above an entrance. Okay. So they have two entrances to Baja Fresh.
And tell me about the new monument sign that's going to be at the entrance here. There's currently not a monument sign down in this particular area?
No, the only existing monument sign is as you enter on the southern end of the driveway.
And so at that particular monument, then we have Trader Joe's. And are we talking about taking that monument away and adding this new one and adding all of the Phase 2 anchors, or are we going to have multiple signs?
I believe the intent is to keep the existing monument sign. This monument sign proposed in the back, I believe, would be focused on the tenants of this portion of Pata I, and then this would be a new monument sign.
Back to the elevations, or do we have those before us?
I believe that those will be on a presentation by the applicant. I don't have those on my presentation.
Thank you, Ryan.
Perhaps this would be a good opportunity for the applicant to come forward and provide some additional information. If you have some information, that way we can maybe ask questions of everyone.
Hi, my name is Paul Poirier. I'm the project architect working on the project with Joel Jennings, and our office is in Santa Barbara, and we do a bit of work up here in the Central Coast. Joel, get that thing hooked up. I think what would probably be best, we have a PowerPoint that has a lot of detail in it. If you guys want me to slow down, I will, but I'll just rifle through it at breakneck pace, because there's some items that are shown here that aren't shown on boards, and I think some of the information might be pertinent. This is a copy of the originally entitled plan that shows a 36,000 square foot building. And in light of the traffic issues and such, you know, we're proposing breaking it up into two smaller buildings. We're not completely locked into the exact geometry or size of those buildings yet, but conceptually we have Petco, lower right corner, 15,000 square feet, and the balance of the building is 18,200 for the building up there. And that's a little bit less than the 36,000 square feet originally proposed. We have 33,200. We're meeting the city's parking standards. This shows how the trucks would circulate around the building, unlike the first phase of this side of the project, where all the trucks pull up in the front of the buildings to load. We're trying to get the back of house to happen behind the buildings, and as it does in a more conventional shopping center, because we don't think that the parking configuration with all the trucks servicing all the buildings in the front will work once we build out the second half. So they would go counterclockwise, pulling in, backing in to where the magenta is behind the Petco building, pulling up and going up and loading for the other tenant building behind there. We had some discussions with the tenants about where they'd like all those things and trying to address their concerns about screening that area and minimizing light overflow in that back of house area, and so we're working to mitigate those efforts with the neighbors. Another concept that we have, we do a lot of shopping center work, and we try to enhance the pedestrian experience as they walk through the center. So we're trying to make a pedestrian path so that if neighbors wanted to walk to the center, they could walk along a path and walk along the fronts of the stores without having to go through a number of crosswalks and walking through basically the field of parking. So the building design, we were trying to be compatible with some of the buildings that don't have the swallow problems at the site. All of the beam tails and things that had been put on some of the other buildings have a serious bird nesting problem, and there's a lot of unsightly netting and things put all over those things. So we were picking up the design elements of the A.G. Edwards building and some of the other ones that have a on this side. And also we're screening the rooftop equipment with the actual parapets of the building as opposed to building things on the roof to shield the view of those things from the neighbors as they did in phase one and the other portion of this phase two. And these are the elevations of the Petco building. You can see the main entrance on the top elevation. The second elevation down that faces south on the right-hand side is a tower element that would have the Petco sign that would be visible from the freeway, which was very important to the tenant to want to go into this location. The rear of the building, which is the east elevation, would have some espaliers and some plantings on that side to help shield the truck loading zone. And we have colored awnings and things, and we're doing sightline studies to make sure that the building elements are screening the rooftop equipment from the neighbors' views. And that's sort of how the two buildings would sit together. You back up there, Joel, one. Approximately like that on the side is viewed from the, would that be the west? Okay, next, you skip over this tree slide. Here's a landscaping plan. Steve Caminetti is working with us on this to create some screening around the back side of the building so that views of the back of house would be mitigated from the neighbors, and also to create some plantings on the east side of the Petco building to shield views of that truck loading area. There, you see that in the back there. So that's it. So I don't know if you guys have any questions.
I do have a couple of questions, and it's kind of picking up where Councilmember Dickens left off with the loading area. Could you back up to the original 36,000 square foot, the single building? Yeah, that one. I'm trying to remember, but it seemed to me that the configuration of this building underwent a couple of changes, and the reason why it did was specifically because of the truck circulation issue. You had mentioned that you needed to interact with the neighbors, and certainly that's something that, you know, is going to have to take place. There's only a few, we're only talking a few yards between this turn and this residence right here. This is not a great distance between this turning radius, this driveway, and this first residence on Via Vaquero. From a noise standpoint, you also have the residence here on the corner of Bandolero and Vaquero, and then another one that you can't see on the screen that's not too far away directly across the street. So you have three neighboring residents that come into play, and that was one of the reasons why we attempted in this reconfiguration to minimize truck traffic from going behind the building as best we could. If happening, then you can see where any potential for truck traffic circulating around these buildings is not going to be something that these neighbors are going to enjoy. And again, that was one of the reasons why we reconfigured that building to move things towards the front. And I realize that's unwieldy when it starts mixing with parking. We see a little bit of that with Trader Joe's right now, but that was the plan. So I don't know how you deal with that, but my first stop would be with those three residents.
We did meet with them. Joel Jennings was there, and I believe, Joel, correct me if I'm wrong, but we had the loading on the north elevation first, and then staff said, no, move it over to the east, and we presented that to the neighbors, and the neighbors actually said, we prefer it back on the north. Is that right? So the reason being, there's a really steep slope that goes up to Via Vaquero, and it puts the truck down kind of in a hole that you'd be looking over from the street above and from the residence that's across the street, whereas if it were on the east, as this plan is showing, it's sort of on the sloping side of the hill, and it's more visible and more impacting to the neighbor that is close to the upper right-hand corner, as you stated. So I think in light of between the time we submitted it to the first architectural review board and now, we have talked to the neighbors, and they concurred that we should rotate the loading around to the north because they felt that would be less of an impact on them. But point well taken. And then we're pushing Petco's farther away from that whole sensitive area and moving it down to the south, kind of to the back of that building.
How far is the distance between the two buildings, this aisleway here? What's the distance there?
Looks like it's about 35 feet.
If there was some way, this is just right off the top of my head, but I don't know if it would work or not. But if there was some way, if delivery was somehow made in this area here, that would allow access to both of these buildings, so the trucks could maybe somehow or another maneuver in this area, I don't know if it's possible or not, between the two buildings, serve both of them from this one area here. And again, I don't know if it would work, but just something to think about. Then it would move the circular truck traffic away from the residents and perhaps minimize the impact on some of the parking areas down here if we could somehow or another maneuver into this area. If the Trader Joe's truck can back up in the way that it does in that small aisle, and then I would think somehow or another we could get a truck to back up in there, and maybe they could coordinate their loading schedule so that they could serve both buildings. I don't know, but it'd be worth taking a look at, I think. Any other questions on this?
Obviously, it's going to significantly increase the traffic needs, and which, in my mind, highlights even greater the need for better circulation. But I think that's already understood. In regards to the pre-application before us and the buildings, in my opinion, I think that we certainly are going to see some sort of development as we build out phase two. I would look at, to the best of our ability, to reduce the square footage as much as possible. But I know that's you've already reduced it several thousand square feet, and we have an anchor that's another anchor, I would say, in the area. So I think the obviously, the greater the square footage, the more traffic it's going to bring in, but that's just a concern. I'm not sure that phase two is going to be able to, without some real innovated improvements with circulation, I'm real concerned about phase two and how it's going to interact with the whole project. In regards to the truck loading, I think it's going to be a real need to interact with the residents. That continues to be an issue in other areas adjacent to this particular Five City Center. And I think we need to be real cognizant of how that is produced. I like the fact that it's going to be, that we're going to provide space. As Mayor Ferrara talked about, though, if we could nestle it in between the two, boy, that looks like it's, at least for the period of time the trucks are there, probably be the area that would be least restrictive, and it still allows for access around the backside. In regards to parking, I see a lot of parking along the backside, along the rear of this, and I'm just not sure it's going to be utilized all that effectively. It would be wonderful if all the employees actually utilized it, but I don't think there's going to be that many employees to actually fill up this parking, which means it really is not all that effective for the public. So that's a concern of mine. In regards to the sign, I'm not sure why we're putting more signs out there. We have a monument sign at the entrance. I would probably not like to see the sign down below off of a West Branch and how somehow connect the existing monument sign and add the new Petco to that. In regards to the way it's been depicted as far as the Petco having an additional sign in the tower facing the Highway 101, I guess I'd have to say that's appropriate. It's unfortunate that we've made some allowances already, but I think that the impact, I don't know, that's still something I'd like to see, I guess. I'm a little torn with continuing to just allow more and more signage. Anyways, but I think we need to reduce the three different signs. I think it's an overkill, but I'd like to see the main sign that's at the entrance be utilized more effectively. As far as the architectural detail, it looks like it's consistent with the area. I don't really have any major heartburn over that. And I'm appreciative of the architect's design element in regards to trying to deter the birds from nesting there, because I think that's, unfortunately, that's just a reality. And it's probably just not the most attractive thing, although the birds need a place to live too. But let's provide some more trees along there. And
moving the multi-tenant retail back into the corner and just eliminating the second truck spot completely. And go to smaller tenants rather than have really one big tenant would be the only one served by the truck space. That would allow the parking to come out in front where it belongs here in this kind of a configuration. And just go with smaller tenants rather than having the one big tenant depicted in the corner, which would allow you to do something different with Petco's truck access. And just eliminate the second truck access on the other side, going with smaller tenants. I mean, that's just my first consideration is that most people, when they pull into this front area is going to fill. They're not even going to think about the back parking lot. Employees aren't allowed to use back parking lots anymore for all kinds of insurance reasons, I understand. So I think that might be a consideration we'll be looking at moving this back and going with more smaller tenants and eliminate the second truck space completely and eliminate all of the potential problem with the residents and truck traffic behind it, and certainly improve the parking. I'm fine. Once we've established that we're going to have signage to the freeway, I don't have any trouble with the Petco signage there. I do think we do have to, since we're going to put this a number of small tenants in the back corner, we're going to have to give them some sort of signage way out in front, and I think that's what you're trying to accomplish with the second monument sign, even though they're not directly connected so that people know they exist there. So I do think there's going to have to be some sort of additional signage in the front of the property. I won't even go into the traffic, but certainly that's the number one issue here. Those would be my comments on it as a pre-app.
Thank you. Councilmember Arnold.
Okay, well, I'll start with the I don't think the timing on this project is correct. I think we really need to solve the traffic first and make sure it's working before we're looking at what are we going to do here. With that said, I have no problem with two buildings, and that I think is probably appropriate. I think the scale will feel better. I would be more in favor of seeing one of the buildings built and then see how that works and then possibly build the second building. I'm concerned that this center is going to be underparked. I definitely think the parking in the back is a waste. One thing I'm looking at is if two larger tenants are required, possibly trying to flop the smaller tenants that are just adjacent to the Petco and putting maybe a larger tenant there and then somehow trying to work out possibly either angling the building or something to get a little bit more frontage and put some smaller tenants on the other side. I think that's really irrelevant right now until we get the traffic solved. Some of the other points are I do think tree screening on the backside is going to be very important. There might be some logic in actually trying to get some of that done now, just to, even for during the construction to help mitigate. I am opposed to the freeway sign. I think the reason for Baja Fresh was they used a loophole because of the extra entrance, and I don't think there are that many precedents there that we need to continue down this road. I'd also be concerned with the way the tower element is actually angled, that that might be visible from the neighborhood. So as it was depicted on the plan initially, I slightly encouraged that I would vote for this to split this right now. My answer would be no until we've done traffic. I'm not going to touch this project until I see the traffic mitigated. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. I agree. I think we really need to pay a lot of attention to the traffic first. And I think that whatever we're going to come back with in terms of working on the Wells Fargo issue should dovetail into this and should begin the process of working with the circulation and the traffic. In terms of the design of the buildings and the relationship to the parking in the rear, I agree that parking in the rear, and we have 47 spaces in the rear, is going to be wasted space. Perhaps we might be able to angle that second building, and I like two buildings rather than one. I think that's a good idea, and I like the fact that we've lost some square footage. If we can move that second building back and leave enough of an access way back there, split the buildings wide enough so that the trucks can use the interior between the two as the loading area, and yet still leave circulation flow through there for fire apparatus, as well as leaving the exit so the trucks will be able to unload between the buildings and then just continue around and come back out in the counterclockwise flow that you had. But you can move the building over and leave just enough room for that to occur and don't have any parking behind the building. I have a real problem with the freeway sign, too. I opposed, back as chair of the Planning Commission, I opposed Trader Joe's getting their sign there. I thought that Trader Joe's was going to be a big enough draw. They didn't need the sign. They were going to do really well with or without the sign. I'm convinced that's true. And if we keep adding signs to the back of the building that make it freeway advertisable, then the center is going to look like the Osh Center over in Pismo. I would have said the Ralph Center, but there's no Ralphs there anymore. But everything that's down there has a sign that's visible from the freeway, and it still doesn't do any good. There are a lot of vacancies down there, and that center doesn't do well. I would oppose a freeway sign. I like the way the design incorporates some measures to counteract the swallows. I don't think we need to provide a habitat for the swallows. I mean, the swallows were here before the buildings were. They don't need the buildings. They're cliff swallows. They need cliffs, and there's plenty of cliffs. So I don't know that we have to build an environment in for them. So anything we can do to minimize the incursion of the birds onto the buildings is good. I think, though, going back, the key issue for me is going to be, what are we doing with circulation, and do we have some solutions coming forward? If we come up with a solution for the Wells Fargo, and then we turn around and look at this and have this come in, and it's just going to aggravate the situation and put it back to where it was, that's going to be a real problem for me. So keep that in mind when whatever project comes back to us. Monument signs, I think we can do out of the monument sign on the corner of Branch and Rancho Parkway and just incorporate additional. The existing monument sign could incorporate some additional work, as well as the new sign on the other driveway will be
wasted space. So I think in term, if we just isolate the changes that we're making to Pad I, the large building broken into two, I favor the concept. If we look at Petco coming in, again, traffic notwithstanding, I favor the concept. The position of this building seems to be okay. You might want to consider taking this corner and sliding it back a little bit if you can, if it allows more space out here. I don't know if you can. I don't know what the dimension is here, but just sort of a general thought. This building, I think, it would serve, particularly if we get into an intensity of use issue, you may want to rethink this building. But in terms of the general position, in terms of size and number of tenants, but in terms of positioning it, if there was a way that you could shift it back into this corner, allow for a safety lane for whatever the code requires, so that there can be circulation around the building, but certainly not at the distance that we're looking at here. Move it around. If you do that, then what you're doing, what you could do, is create more distance in between the buildings and allow for potential service of a of trucks through here for both buildings. If you rethink the positioning of in the square footage, and I understand that this is conceptual at this point, at least I'm assuming it is. You don't have each one of these squares filled up and this big box filled up yet. Is that right? Okay, so if you look at the configuration here, maybe reverse some of the small businesses over here, put the larger tenant over here, if that's what you have in mind doing, is having a larger tenant, then truly you could service both of those tenants from the rear through one aisle. And that would allow those trucks to back up in this area. Also, I think we need to look at another potential, and we mentioned this years ago in phase one. We talked about how we would configure a loading and unloading operation in the back of a building. And again, it is correlated to the size and square footage and the use. But it doesn't necessarily have to be a loading dock. It can be a loading area. It can be a door, a roll-up door, which would minimize the necessity for trucks to back down some form of a narrow loading dock type thing. So the degree to which you could serve both of these buildings with a loading area doesn't necessarily have to be on the rear. It could be on the side and serviced by truck deliveries in that way. So, you know, you can get creative in this center area, and again, I think it is dependent upon how this building is positioned. And if it's, as my colleagues indicated, if we can position it in such a way, maybe angle it a little bit so that you create more space in here, I believe that has that's going to be forthcoming on Pad I. Did I understand you to say that?
Carol Florence again, actually environmental review of the project.
Okay.
Not necessarily an environmental impact report, but there will be an initial study to make that determination.
And traffic will be one element of it?
Yes, which I'm hoping that we look at that now within this 30-day period and then relook at it again based upon the changes that may in fact be made based on your comments this evening.
Okay, and am I to assume with Mr. Oros's presence that he's your traffic consultant?
Yes, I think we're going to be working as a team with your public works staff and OmniMeans as well.
Okay, then I want to make sure that we get our standards straight and that as best as we can, and Mr. Oros is very familiar with the use of Sandag, but we want to make sure that if whatever traffic impact study is as close to reality as we can possibly make it, and that certainly is not ITE, at least I don't know how it is today, but it certainly wasn't when this project was originally studied. So in terms of a benchmark here for any further environmental impact as it relates to traffic, that would be my recommendation. And I'm not sure whether it's Sandag or whether it's actual driveway counts in a similar demographic location, whatever it takes. But I think this council is going to be dealing in reality and not an off-the-shelf formula.
Your concern is duly noted, Mayor.
Okay. As far as the architecture goes, I think what we saw up there is pretty close to what already exists. I don't have an issue with that. I don't have an issue with the mitigation for the birds, and I'm well aware of the mess that they can create. And so if we can entice them to go elsewhere simply by the design of the building, that would be a good thing. And in terms of the sign, there's history there as well. I'm not going to support a freeway sign any further, and I agree. I don't believe that we're far enough along here to establish precedents. It was an interesting discussion that we had with Trader Joe's, and there was also a bit of arm twisting and negotiation for the sake of history. And Councilmember Dickens was accurate in his statements. We offered a monument sign down below so that we could get away from putting that big sign facing the freeway, and Trader Joe's said absolutely not, that it's not effective and unnecessary. And they even went so far as to assure us that if they didn't get the freeway sign, they were not going to come here. That was their bottom line. Consequently, they got their freeway sign. So, but I don't think that we're far enough along so that we have to make a habit of this. And the rest of the story is that through the negotiation for this center, in terms of aesthetics, the community design program, and I would certainly support that. So those are my comments.
I have one follow-up, Mr. Mayor.
Sure.
Can I borrow your laser again?
Yeah.
If we look at if it's possible to move this building back a bit, instead of going counterclockwise, make this clockwise so that as the trucks came in, they might be able to stop in this area and unload for this portion, and then stop in this area to unload for this portion of the building, and stop over here to unload for the Petco building. And no one would ever have to back up. The trucks would never have to back up. They'd flow in this way in a clockwise direction, stop here for that, stop here for that, or stop here for that. And they'd never back up, and they'd just flow out that way. Thank you.
Okay. Any other observations?
Mr. Mayor, could I just make one more observation? Yep. As I look at this, and this is mainly to the applicant, and as I look at the success of Trader Joe's and I look at what we're doing here and sizing the different retail, has there been any discussion, and again, this is all it deals with marketing and so forth, has there been any discussions with Trader Joe's to move into the other unit, which would give it increased space? Just a thought. Thank you.
And I think that what Councilmember Dickens just mentioned is something that we had talked about when Ms. Florence and I had a discussion on some of these items, that in terms of rearranging or rethinking some of the tenant locations, that it might serve both of us to sort of unwrap things and take a fresh look and see if we can't make these two phases work better together. And that's something that, I would certainly be willing to participate and facilitate. Okay, any other observations? Okay, this is the purpose of this item was just to offer observations and comments and some sentiments from the council members. This is not an action item, so I hope that what we've offered you is helpful. Okay. Okay, that takes us to item 11B, consideration of approval of code enforcement citation process.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor.
Good evening, Terry.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. This staff report is going to be done by our interim neighborhood services coordinator, John Ensolabaher, And John is has been working with us in a part-time basis, helping us make this transition, picking up the code enforcement process.
In researching implementation of this recommendation, it has been determined that the city's current municipal code currently contains citation authority. However, staff would like to obtain approval from the City Council with regard to the proposed process before incorporating it into the city's ongoing practices. Staff would also want to use this opportunity to update the City Council on the progress on the changes to the code enforcement program. The City of Arroyo Grande's current code enforcement program is citizen complaint driven, which involves enforcement cooperation between the police, fire, and community development departments and the neighborhood services coordinator. Initially, all complaints are channeled through the fire department for community safety assessment and then directed to the appropriate enforcement agency. The police department is responsible for enforcing all vehicle-related codes. The community development assists in the enforcement of zoning and land use-related issues. The fire department is responsible for the initial response as well as a first and second follow-up inspections for most other municipal codes, including the uniform codes. The neighborhood services coordinator is responsible for the overall coordination of the program in response to most cases not resolved by the second inspection. The city's code enforcement program relies heavily upon voluntary compliance by violators. Initially, if possible, voluntary compliance is encouraged by simply informing the violator of the violation in person and giving the violator a visual inspection notice. If the property is in compliance, then a thank you letter is mailed. If the property is still in violation, voluntary compliance is then encouraged by sending the violator up to 3 additional notice letters as necessary, with each letter building upon the previous under circumstances of a violation. Each notice letter provides a description and explanation of the violation, direction on how to fix the violation, and a reasonable timeline to bring their property into compliance. If, by the 3rd and final notice letter, which is called the notice in order to abate, a violation still exists, the city has 2 options for enforcement. One option for enforcement is an abatement procedure. Compliance by a nuisance abatement procedure requires a court order allowing the city to remedy the violation at the violator's expense. The court order allows the city to enter the property and take all reasonable means necessary to bring the property into compliance. Due to the expense and staff time required, staff has recommended establishing a simpler option for cases other than those creating an immediate health safety hazard. As a result, staff recommends a citation process be used. The citations are specifically a notice to appear in court. The violator can admit guilt by paying and forfeiting the bail amount for the violation citation. Otherwise, the violator may contest the violation by appearing in court at the date and time indicated on the citation and present their case. The fine amount for an infraction citation is $100 for the first violation within a 1-year period, $200 for the second violation within a 1-year period, and $500 for any additional violations within a 1-year period. These citation amounts or bail amounts are the state preset amounts for municipal code violations cited as infractions. The city does have the option to adopt a bail schedule via a council resolution, which indicates specific bail amounts for specific violations. Each of these enforcement procedures will be used on a minimal basis, and the neighborhood services coordinator will first arrange an in-house meeting between the appropriate city personnel and the accused violators to explain the situation, inform the violator of the city's available enforcement methods, and to possibly develop enforcement and abatement have been referred to the interdepartmental task force and await citation implementation prior to enforcement. The remaining 39 cases have or soon will achieve compliance. The city has also addressed 37 new code enforcement violations with 25 cases determined to be compliant and is awaiting compliance from 8 cases in the near future. Ongoing tracking is achieved by a paper system and a newly developed computer tracking program. The computer-based tracking program can store all personal information, notice letters, pictures, and other necessary information about each case. A multiple subject search will allow case retrieval. The computer-based tracking program can also produce a variety of comprehensive or specific code enforcement reports for review. Additionally, the computer tracking program will use assessor parcel numbers, APN numbers, to account for city time for violations found in redevelopment areas, which qualify for community development block grant funding. A number of common problems have also been targeted to be addressed proactively through public education rather than enforcement. These efforts will address common problems that can be mitigated effectively and inexpensively if the community is simply given proper information regarding the city's rules and regulations. For example, a trifold pamphlets have been made to address fence and wall issues and business signage issues. Additionally, the business signage pamphlet will be given to all those who receive a business license. An informational door hanger has been developed to address basketball hoops and other right-of-way obstructions. And these informational pamphlets are an example of the city's focus on code enforcement as a community service program. Additionally, a monthly interdepartmental task force has been established to help resolve problematic and or sensitive code enforcement cases. The interdepartmental task force meeting also increases intercity communication about community issues and provides a platform to discuss the overall code enforcement program. These task force code meetings have helped increase awareness and to discuss and create enforcement strategies for some of the city's most problematic issues regarding code enforcement. Overall, the monthly task force meeting and the reorganization has greatly benefited the city's code enforcement program. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have any other comments, Chief?
The only comment that I have, Mr. Mayor and members of the council, is that this program closely mirrors the program that we have established over in Grover Beach as part of our joint management agreement that we have with that fire department. We plan, as John mentioned, there is an electronic process being developed right now in-house that will allow us to track the whole program. That program will then be available both in the Arroyo Grande Department of Building and Fire as well as the Grover Beach Fire Department. And I must say that the program over there is going equally as well as it is here, mostly due there to one particular individual that heads up the program, and here certainly because of John's efforts. John has done a tremendous, tremendous job helping us get to the point that we are today. I think one of the things that has been so difficult at this point is we can only take it to a certain point. Then it must come back to you through the city attorney to be acted upon, and this will allow us to have an extra step in there before we have to bring anything to you, which hopefully we will be able to solve through the citation program. The city manager or the city attorney might have some additional input on that, but I believe that this gives us the tool that will allow us to bridge over those 15 cases. I do turn it over to the city manager or the city attorney if they have any comment.
Yeah, well, that was pretty well answered. I would just say that those particular cases, back up, the majority of the cases we received, especially through this new process, which we've tried to implement a more personal approach, the majority of folks we come across are fairly cooperative in resolving the cases. These 15 represent a small group of people that have just not been willing to comply. In the past, as Chief Fiebig explained, when it got to a certain point, the city was reluctant to go to the expense of taking these to court unless they were significantly, threatened public safety. And so they've kind of understood that and basically said, I'm not going to do it, and those cases have been stalled. This really gives us a better tool in between those two steps, having to take it to court. I think if we can issue a citation, folks will know that the city is serious about resolving that case, and it will help us to get a case resolved without having to litigate it.
Steve and or Tim, in regards to the last step of or virtually the last step of a citation and a notice to appear, in the staff report, it states that most likely the city attorney wouldn't need to show up for the first hearing in case it was contested, and then there might be some other additional need down the road. With this new process, is there going to be an increase in city attorney time dedicated to this issue? And if so, how much?
We've been fortunate in the past to have the cooperation of the district attorney's office in at least handling the initial arraignments and sometimes the pretrials. I think if we use the process successively, they'll be reluctant to continue that. But if we're judicious, no pun intended, about how and when we use it, that has been effective in the past in eliminating a need to have me there, and it's been effective. If it gets to the trial phase, obviously at a certain point I do have to appear and organize and win the case. But we're hopeful that it won't be used on that level and that we'll have the cooperation of the district attorney's office and continue to reduce costs and not have my involvement. So that's our hope. If it changes, we'll certainly bring it to your attention and probably tweak the process a little so that we can avoid those costs.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, those are all my questions right now.
See, Councilmember Guthrie, you had one, I think.
Yeah. Just so I understand what you're looking for is from us tonight, you already have the ability. Do you already have the ability to issue the citation with a fine involved, or are you looking for us to approve the ability to issue that citation?
I would like.
And because this is what confused me, then what is it now that the district attorney does for us that we're using judiciously?
Typically, they'll require a representative of the city, an attorney, which happens to only be me, unfortunately, or else we'd send Phoebic, to appear and to handle the arraignment. The district attorney is usually there with a stack of files, and if we just have one or two, oftentimes they'll handle that arraignment for you, and you kind of instruct them as to what you want to happen.
But, I mean, have we done any of these in the last 2 years? I mean, the impression I have is that we haven't used this process, but...
We have not used the process as far as I know. I certainly haven't been involved in the last 2 years. And we used it very frugally before then.
And that's a criminal complaint process and not a citation process.
Well, citations get you in court for the same basic principle on an infraction rather than on a misdemeanor.
Are you referring to the citation process or the abatement?
Referring to the citation process right now. I was kind of guessing that in fact, the abatement process is what we would have to use that the district attorney would get involved
in. We currently use that, but very infrequently because it is an
only for a safety issue
proposition to get into.
Okay.
Yeah, the distinction is the abatement process is a civil process where you go to court and you essentially are in the civil domain, a judge hearing what your complaints are, listening to what the response is, and then if he sides with the city, ordering the abatement of whatever the nuisance is. Anything that's a municipal code violation under our code is considered a nuisance that can be abated by a court. It can also be abated by the council, but we choose not to use that process because it gets very cumbersome. So the criminal process involves the use of the district attorney's office on a sort of nominal basis. If it doesn't get resolved and bail is not forfeited and it goes to the next level where there's a pretrial and a judge wants to see some active involvement from the city and from the city attorney, then I have to actually be there. The hope is it doesn't get that far. Normally on infractions, they want to see it end early in the process, too, because it takes a lot of time and energy on their end as well. Oftentimes, they have to obtain or retain counsel. So most of the time, my experience, and in other cities, they use this routinely. I represented Paso Robles and Grover for many years, and this was the most active form of code enforcement, just pushing them into court. And it had its rough edges, and it was expensive. So we've been very lucky to avoid having to use the process here. Occasionally, you have these leftover complaints that just can't be resolved through voluntary compliance and repeated encouraging, and those are the ones that end up in court.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yeah, I have just one question in reference to, really illegal granny units and converted garages and stuff. We've talked about some kind of amnesty program to get these people kind of on board. Where are we with that right now?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And John mentioned this interdepartmental task force that we've set up as part of the reorganization. We have folks from the different departments get together and strategize on citywide approaches to our most complicated cases. And that's something that's being studied right there. John has done quite a bit of research and has come up with some proposals and recommendations. He's going to be meeting with Chief Phoebic over this next month. And in our next meeting, we're going to try to come up with some recommendations to a very very challenging program in terms of getting that under control. But it's been identified as...
Would discourage someone who maybe has bought a home that has items that are not in compliance from wanting to disclose them for fear that they're going to get hit with that fee to remedy it that's going to be above and beyond something they didn't create. So that's the only reason. But other than that, I'll bring a drift now into a comment. So that's all. Thank you. Yeah.
But that's why that particular, we're kind of doing minimal enforcement in those areas until we have this overall strategy and plan together. And I would expect we would be prepared to bring that to council for consideration in probably April.
Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem, do you have a question?
Yes, I do. Very quickly, I understand the process. We've got three letters that builds gradually towards the issuance of the citation if it becomes necessary. I want to ask what happens in a situation where a citation is issued, the person chooses to forfeit the bail, they pay the fine. Then what?
I'll let you answer that, John, because you know the program very well.
Well, we're hoping that they pay the fine and then they're required to fix the violation. And then if they don't, then they're subject to additional fines each and every day a violation exists is constitute a new fine. So ultimately, I mean, each day you can have $100 citation, and hopefully by having the citation program that people will know that it's a serious violation and that they'll be encouraged to fix the violation rather than get additional citations.
Okay, so if someone were issued a citation that's a $100 citation, if they forfeit the fine and they choose not to resolve the problem, they're issued another citation, it's still $100, or does that go to the second level, it's the second one, and then they go to the third one? Or?
Well, Tim can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's as long as it's within a one-year period, it's considered a second fine, then it goes to the next step, which is a $200 fine. And then within the same 100 or one-year period, it can go up to $500, and then each and every day is a $500 fine. I mean, ultimately, but I mean, it depends on how Chief Ubik or the fire chief.
How the process would flow. And I'm assuming it would take a period of time. If citation were issued to a person today, they'd be going to deal with that in court or the forfeiting the bail in a two-week or three-week period of time, and then you'd have another couple of days to go out and inspect it again. So you might be talking about the process taking weeks, 30 days.
Yeah. Okay. And in addition to the notices before a citation would be issued, we're proposing to attempt at least with the individual to meet and discuss other ways to resolve the problem, and I assume when those citations started going out at key points, we would also be trying to meet with them and see if we could get them to resolve it. I don't think we just keep ratcheting out citations day after day. I mean,
it's a worst case scenario.
We would be working with them in between there, seeing what we could do to get them to resolve the problem.
Mayor Pro Tem, in these types of citation programs, there are model citation programs that are laid out in the uniform codes, the building codes and the fire codes, and one of the parts of that process is a pre-citation hearing or meeting that is held, and that is to get all parties together before the citation is even issued. So it's
then 10 days of the notice to appear to establish a reasonable amount of time for compliance. So the structure is there. They're expected within 10 days of getting the citation to meet with someone and work out some kind of a compliance program. Is that the intent here? And if they don't, then according to this, by not complying, you are subjecting yourself to more citations for each and every day a violation exists. What you might do there in that paragraph, I think, maybe is I don't know if it would be appropriate, but if we have established a fine structure, then maybe we ought to put it in there. You may be subject to a fine of up to, or however you want to state it. But I think, putting some teeth in there would be beneficial and perhaps spur someone to actually get busy and develop some form of a compliance plan, which is ultimately what you want them to do. If they think they're just going to get a slide and another citation and, they'll pay if you receive so many citations, then, the fine goes up considerably, and maybe that's when we get into the courtroom stuff. I don't know. Maybe at that point it's declared a public nuisance and away you go.
And those that are really egregious and repeat offenders and don't fix, we cite as misdemeanors. Yeah. That changes the whole complexion of things. And the second thing is judges are very persuasive, usually when they're talking to a violator about not doing it again, not appearing before them again, yeah. even laying it out as a term of, you know, a probation. Or the judges are the most effective means in discouraging repeat offenders. But those that really will not fix, they're cited in a much different manner and face much stiffer penalties.
This is not a public hearing, but we typically allow members of the audience who are present, if you'd like to come forward and comment on this, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. No takers? I thought this would be a juicy one. We'd get some action, but okay. We'll bring it back and comments. And action for the council. And Councilmember Guthrie, why don't you start this one for us?
Well, I do think this is a well-put-together procedure. I compliment staff on following through and saying that really I think something very important that needs to happen is, in fact, going to take place. I do think as we see higher densities and those kinds of things, we're going to see the need for more and more compliance with some of the more basic code compliance issues, that it's going to become more of a nuisance as these kinds of things take place, and that we will in fact need greater enforcement and we'll need greater compliance. So I think this is a good program. I'm surprised that with it in place already, we weren't already using it, but I guess that's what it takes, is a close look to get it started. So yeah, I'm certainly in favor of moving forward with it.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, I think it's one of those things that it's those that tend to shirk the responsibility or need a little bit of a hammer. Unfortunately, we need to have a little bit of a hammer, and I think this is what provides it. And I know that these issues can get cumbersome and complicated, and hopefully it doesn't take up too much staff time to deal with. But it's from a community standpoint, it is a community service program, and I think it's appropriate. The one item that I didn't see addressed here is that of the fact that it's citizen complaint driven, and I guess what I'd like to just throw out there is that typically this comes to the city's attention based on some sort of a nuisance provided by a neighbor or somebody with knowledge of some potential complaint. I'm assuming that there's also communication to that particular individual, because a lot of it is either miscommunication or that they needed feedback, and they need to know that the city's being proactive in a judicial way or judicious way to solve the complaint. I think it gets a little cumbersome, you know, when these things drag on and on and on, to keep that person updated. But it is important to also go back to the source and let them know what the city is doing periodically. And I see some heads nodding yes, and that's – if you want to address that, Terry, please do.
Certainly. There's two aspects to that. We will ultimately inform the reporting party or the complainant what our disposition is, what our progress is. The other part of that is, just so that it is very clear to the council, this is a proactive program. It is not a reactive program that is just awaiting calls that come from complaining parties out in the community, but we are actually incorporating this into using staff members all throughout the city. Most notably, the platform that will be operated off of is a fire engine. While those folks are out, that's part of their job, is to be observing certain areas. The city has been divided into quadrants, and they have areas of responsibility relative to fire inspections, and of course now code enforcement will come into play as well. So they'll be making those observations and initiating reports from the windshield of the fire engine.
And I think our approach has been relatively successful, and I think that just adding this component, or at least crystallizing this particular process, I think will be important for us. So with that, that concludes my comments, and I'm certainly in favor of moving forward. I would like to just make a comment that as some of these cases do get complicated, I know they will be brought forth to council, because we may need to adjust and to look at how severely this can be perceived. So, and I know in the past we've done that. So, just keeping the council abreast of any of those complicated issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Arnold.
I commend staff. This is an excellent program. I think we're really being generous to the nice job. Thank you,
Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And I'll echo the comments that my colleagues have said. I think this is a well-crafted set of measures. Nice job putting it together, John. Very well done. And it stresses the city's intent to have people voluntarily comply. We give people a number of different chances. We're going to go through a lot of different processes here to get people to voluntarily comply, educate people as to what they've done that might be wrong, and try to get some sort of resolution. However, there will be the small percentage of cases that, for whatever reason, people don't want to comply. People are not going to be willing to just take a warning and fix the problem. And at that point, we do need a citation system in place. It allows us the extra tool to get these things accomplished. I think it's well structured. I would go ahead and put in the fine notice on the citation itself, so people could see that. I don't know if we need to go into a more complex. I think I noticed in the report here that we might want to come up with a whole system of fines. I don't know if we need to go any more than the $1 to $500 ones and go with that. I trust that this will not put an undue burden on the city attorney and his office. If it does, we'll have to revisit that, but I can support what's before us, and thank staff for doing a great job.
Thank you. I, too, was going to suggest that we maybe do a bit of a preemptive strike and not only have the language on the citation that indicates the fine amount, but maybe back it into the notice and order to abate, which is the last and final warning letter, I think, that goes out. And there are two aspects that I'd like to commend staff on. First is the progressive approach. This is a reasonable approach. Somebody mentioned the hammer analogy, and clearly what this does is start with a small rock hammer and works its way up to a single jack. And so that's what a system like this should do, give someone a chance along that continuum to fix the problem, which is what we're after. And then, of course, the big hammer falls at the end of the process if they don't. The other thing that I'd like to commend you on, and I don't know whose brainchild this was, but we had talked about it when we sort of reconfigured the whole code enforcement program. We had talked about the fact that the nature of code violations transcends one agency. Some are more in the area of community development. Some require the police department to get involved. Some require fire. And so whoever dreamed up the, and I want you to think about this acronym, the IDTF. That way, John, in the future, you can get through that quickly. Okay. Took them a while to recognize that, didn't it? Okay, so the IDTF, I think, is a great concept. That's the way it should work, not only for code violations, but for other issues that happen day-to-day that are problematic, that require input from all elements to you. And you probably didn't have anything to do with this, Terry, so I'm not going to say congratulations to you. So that's right. So with that, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to make a motion to accept the approval of the code enforcement citation process with the stipulation that some fine information is added to both the citation and to at least one of the earlier warnings.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, the only discussion would be if is this going to be reconfigured? Would this come back as a consent item so we can take one more look at it, or how do you want to work it?
It's up to you. I don't think that's necessary, but if you'd like us to bring it back.
I'm just curious as to see what kind of wording you end up with, so however we can do that.
Yeah, we could just put it in your box, and if you have, it's pretty flexible. We have the flexibility to modify the wording.
Okay,
so
that'd be good.
If you review it and let us get us a note if you had a different suggestion.
Okay. Any other discussion? If not, roll call, please.
Councilmember Arnold.
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie.
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello.
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara.
Yes. Thank you. Okay, that takes us to item 11C, consideration of a request from the City of Pismo Beach to participate in a study on joint fire services.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the Council. This year, as you know, the City has implemented a joint operations agreement with the City of Grover Beach for fire service, in which both of our departments maintain their control and identity, but share training, administration, and emergency response is based upon the station closest to any call for service. Thus far, it has worked very well for us. At the same time, the City of Pismo Beach recently renewed their agreement with CDF for fire services. However, their City Council at the same time did indicate that they'd like to at least look at other potential options for service in the future. And as a result, they've asked us to participate in a study that would assess possible joint fire operations with Pismo Beach, Grover Beach, and Oceano. And the City of Pismo Beach has agreed to pay all the costs associated with that study. Staff believes that there is a potential to further enhance our level of service through such a partnership. However, we've also identified a number of issues that would need to be addressed. And therefore, staff agrees that preparing a study would be a good idea, and it would also be a good opportunity for the city to better determine whether such an arrangement would be in the best interest of our community. Therefore, staff respectfully recommends the council direct staff to work with the staffs of the other jurisdictions in preparing the study and bringing it back to council for consideration. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have, and Chief Feedback is still here if you have any.
Adjoining cities and jurisdictions and looking at any potential that might be beneficial, one from a public safety issue and increasing our level of service and so forth. My only comment would be that I'm not really interested in looking at how Arroyo Grande could move into CDF fire protection. So that's not something that I'm interested in, but it doesn't look like that's where we're moving. And I think that what we have is a wonderful department. We've been able to blend, I think, really well with our services with Grover Beach. I think that has been a real positive, been able to enhance our public safety capabilities. And if this is an opportunity to continue to look in that direction, then I'm certainly willing to do so. So I think it's prudent for us to at least give this a chance and see what might be in the future. So I'd like to see it move forward.
Councilor, can I just respond to one point because I think it was an important point. Councilmember Dickens brought up the CDF. I just wanted to clarify that it's my understanding after having a discussion with the city manager of Pismo Beach that the CDF would not be part of the study. That's not one of the options. The objective of the study is to determine if the other jurisdictions decided they wanted to do service together, what is the best way to do that? What are some of the options and how could that best be structured? But going outside wasn't part of the scope of work.
Councilmember Arnold.
Yeah, I support this. I did when we discussed it a few weeks ago. I think there's nothing wrong with gathering information, especially when it doesn't cost us much. Staff obviously feels that it isn't going to take much of their time to provide the information. So I definitely look forward to seeing what comes of the study.
Thank you. Councilmember Guthrie.
Yeah, I too concur here. I mean, there's just too many potential benefits to. I realize we've gone around this merry-go-round a number of times, but one time it's going to work because it's going to be to everybody's benefit. So I certainly am in favor of taking another look at it.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I also am in favor of talking with these various agencies, Oceano and Pismo Beach, and looking at the benefits and potential improvements that can be made. Anything that makes us more efficient, anything that gives us a certain amount of synergy that's going to either maintain or improve our level of service to the citizens of this community is well worth looking at. However, one thing that I think we have to be very careful about is when we look at this with the other communities is that we can't dilute our levels and our standards. I'm very familiar with a particular project in the city of Pismo Beach that the city council approved where the fire chief said, we need a new fire station. And they chose to ignore that and approve the project without the new fire station, even though it lowered their response times and it burdened their department. I'm interested in talking to these departments. I'm interested in talking to these communities if it can improve our efficiency, but I'm not.
So infrastructure issues, and because our agency and our city, our department and our city, believes in level of service, believes in high standards, everyone worked very hard for that bond measure that led to a much better fire facility. So we're addressing our performance-related facilities and infrastructure to make sure we maintain those standards. So the Mayor Pro Tem's point is very well taken. It's more than just a commitment to an agreement. They have to take care of their end of things. And I, too, would look very carefully at some of those issues. But beyond that, I think the study will, in fact, lead to, I think, surfacing some of the ways in which we can, as a, I hate to use the word district because that implies other things, but certainly the five cities area can look at perhaps resolving some mutual issues together and working better. Certainly seems to be the direction thus far with Grover. So if we can continue the positive performance levels with Pismo and perhaps Oceano, then I'm sure the studies will show that. But once again, there's got to be a community support base in the form of infrastructure for their end of the resources that are going to be participating in this agreement. Okay. With that, we need a motion to approve to participate in a study that City of Pismo Beach, I understand, Steve, is going to fund, right?
Okay. So moved.
Seconded.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Thank you. Takes us to item 12, city council member items. Gentlemen, any items? I do have one quick one, Steve, that I would like to see staff develop, and that comes back to a topic that was raised earlier this evening. And that is some of the CC&Rs or the city policy or code, whatever it is, that sets the times for deliveries in shopping centers. Not only the situation that's occurring in Five City Center, but the new Long Center. There's delivery trucks and backup warning horns going off at 5:30, quarter to 6 in the morning. That's not acceptable. So if we can look into that and bring it back, I'd appreciate it. Yeah.
Mr. Mayor, I have a point. I'm not sure whether it belongs here, if it belongs in council communications, but I'll throw it out here. I would like to encourage any members of the community and maybe staff to generate anyone with an interest in participating in any of our commissions or agencies to come forward and let city clerk know. We have a couple of vacancies now, and we're interested in finding committed and dedicated people that want to participate in some of these commissions to let us know. And we need your help.
Maybe, and we have an opening on the Traffic Commission for any member of the community who would like to come forward. And as far as the SeaTac, Rep. Kelly, I think you and I discussed that we'd have Don put that on the agenda and see if the Traffic Commissioners could select a representative among themselves and see if that works. Okay. Any other council member items? That takes us to city manager items. Okay, any council communication, correspondence, contacts with the community? None? All right, then staff communications?
Just really briefly, a couple of dates to mention to you. Once again, we mentioned in the budget goals that May 18th is what we're shooting for our budget study schedule. So if you can check your calendars, we'll contact you this week. And then I believe Mary's still working with you on
the meeting with setting up a meeting with Assemblyman Blakesley, and we're shooting it for April 1st, I believe. Right now, the first date we were looking at did not work, so hopefully get back and see if we can confirm that with everybody tomorrow.
What was the day we're looking at now?
April 1st, and I don't have off the top of my head the time. I think it was in the morning.
No fooling?
I think it was like 10 o'clock, something like that.
No fooling. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that depends on opportunities for April Fool's jokes there.
Yeah. Okay. Takes us to item 16. This is our last community comments and suggestions. Opportunity for anyone to come forward. You interested, Mr. Ross? Okay.
On my way in this evening, my name is Steve Ross, 211 Garden Street. On my way in this evening, I parked in the parking lot across the street, as I often do, and went across the street. There are two young ladies standing at the crosswalk on the south side of the street, wanted to come across to go to the deli. I heard them talking about it. They were afraid to cross the street because of the traffic. There was a lot of traffic at that time. And they turned to walk and go away. And as I walked up, I kind of looked and kind of stepped out in the road, and a couple of cars stopped, and I crossed. And they took that opportunity to come in and behind me and cross. A year or so ago, I know there was some discussion about potentially putting some kind of a lighted crosswalk or two in the village to help with that. And I was just curious if that had progressed anywhere. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a good question. And that same question came up a few weeks ago, not only for this crosswalk, but the one down near Lightning Joe's. And Steve, can you give us an update?
Sure. Yeah, actually, we have potentially good news. There's a lot of steps to go through, so I don't like to get too optimistic. So we're moving ahead. And, we proposed one for right at the intersection at Short and then the other one down at Bridge.
And I think we modified them so that, unlike the city of San Luis Obispo, we would not have the vertical sign that flashes, but the ones in the pavement that would be triggered by the little photoelectric cell that when you approach the crosswalk, they would begin to operate. Okay. Anything else? All right. coming back to the opening of the meeting and the rather disheartening news about the passing of Mike Titus, if the council has no objections, we would like to adjourn this evening's meeting in the memory of Mike Titus.
So moved.
Okay. And we have a motion and a second. So all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. So we'll adjourn. Okay.